Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and welcome to Week's End. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. But there's a wide variety of ways to listen. The podcast is available. The podcast address is available at WhiteRoseSociety.org under my file there. As are the stream links. You can always get them there. It's very easy to get the stream simply by going to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and clicking on the Listen Live button. Barring that, you could go to TuneIn Radio. You could go to Stitcher Internet Radio. You could go to Tuner Internet Radio. And I'm working on another platform right now, but I've got to come up with a bunch of information for it. But suffice to say that the means by which you can get this most unique of little internet-based radio broadcasts is growing and growing and growing. Friday on the front porch here, and we are slowly making our way, thank you very much, toward the hope of finishing this month in the black to the good. Of course, we'll still be in a hole from previous months, but we're not counting that. Our optimism knows no bounds. We are at present $515 away from making our monthly goal. And we've got until the 31st to do it. But you know what? I get sick of doing this. But this is what makes, this is how in August we make sure there's a September. So do it, I must. And this is my promise to you. If my understanding of the calendar is correct, and I do believe it is, then next week we have the 27th, the 28th, the 29th, the 30th, and 31st. That's all 5 days of next week in which, if we could meet the funding goal this weekend, before this weekend is out, that's 5 days of fundraising free broadcasting. Wouldn't that be lovely? I'd like it. I tend to think you would, too. So that's 51 people. 51 people who haven't contributed this month, kicking in 10 bucks apiece, and we're done. That's 102 people at 5 bucks apiece. That's 25 and a quarter people, I don't know, at 20 bucks apiece. Do the math. But it is possible that we could finish this month in the black, in the good, and be done, and be done with these annoying alerts for the desperate effort to keep this whole affair running. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, and the snail mail address is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. I will go ahead and repeat it in case you've got a pencil and paper handy, and you're saying, gee, I wish that Bob would give me the snail mail address. Well, here it is. It's The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, P as in Paul, M as in Mary, B as in Bravo, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, West Virginia, W-V, zip code 25801. And remember, if you're sending a check or a money order, do not make it payable to Bob Kincaid, because Bob Kincaid does not get the money. Make it payable to The Horn. Interesting email to start the evening coming in from Jack in Shreveport. Under the subject line, they want it. Jack writes, ha! I just heard Randy Rhodes say they want it all and they want it now. Well, it's not like we've got a trademark or a patent on it or anything, but still. Maybe the idea is getting around. Maybe all this whispering that we're doing into the ear of the universe is finally catching up. Had an ongoing dialogue with Michael, otherwise known as Kid A, when he pops into the chat room. The chat room's open, by the way. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Up and running for Friday on the front porch. Good evening, Tim. Our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Hey, Sal. Jug of Punch is in the room. Greg's in the house. Bertrand Russell is in the house. I thought he was dead. No, I know who that is. And Bermuda Sand is there as well. Jump on in. The conversation there is fine as well. But no, as I was saying, I've had an online conversation going pretty much all day long with Michael, who at this point is some, I don't know, maybe he's experiencing those same sort of sensations that make me feel like I want to go run in circles in the yard and chase rabbits and stuff. Michael wrote earlier in the day, I just read on Gawker that Joe Arpaio and Donald Trump are speaking at the convention. Tell me they got that wrong, Bob. That can't be accurate. What the Bob? Why are they shunning Todd Akin? He should be doing the keynote with that bunch. By the way, asks Michael, what night's the cross burning? Well, they're all set for one. It's a rogues gallery, a trip into the into the booby hatch, whatever you want to call it, this upcoming conclave, clavern, whatever it is that Michael also inquiring, hey, why not have Nuge or Dave Mustaine or Bo Cephas on the stage to do some entertaining? Who's to say they're not, Michael, huh? How about Kirk Cameron to speak up on gay issues, you know, like their lack of eternal salvation? Or maybe the Westboro Baptists or Pat Robertson or Glenn Beck or the Savage Wiener or God knows who. I mean, Arpaio and Trump have no other issues except birtherism. Well, I guess Joe can also talk about how he's rounded up the brown folks and then Romney can lose all the Latino vote, save for the Cubans. I seriously, says Michael, can't believe Arpaio and Trump are speaking. I'm going to have to find confirmation on that, but God knows, why should I be so shocked? But no, they really are. I mean, look at this lineup. Or, okay, this is radio, so I probably ought not say look. Let's see. Donald Trump. Actress Janine Turner. The cute one from Northern Exposure. Her, too? Damn. She's a birther, too. Attorney General Sam Olens from Georgistan will be on the podium. He's a birther. He said, you know, the state of Hawaii says he's produced a certificate, certified birth certificate, so on one hand, I have to trust the state of Hawaii follows the laws. On the other hand, it would be nice for the president to say, here it is, I have a copy. You know, sooner or later, they're going to try to prevent Barack Obama from even voting. Don't think they're not working on it. Mike Huckabee will be speaking. So there's your right-wing radio TV guy, Michael. I guess Michael the Savage Wiener didn't get the invite. And I don't know, maybe Glenn Beck will introduce Willard, seeing how they're, you know, they got matching underwear and stuff. Mike Huckabee once said, I would love to know more about where Obama was born. What I know is troubling enough. Florida governor and unindicted co-conspirator Rick Scott. He said he'd have to look into it as to whether Barack Obama was born in the United States of America. Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers, a Repig Lickin from Washington, is the vice chairman of the House Republican Conference. She said, oh, I'd like to see the documents, the birth certificates. And then, of course, there's always Piyush Jindal. I imagine Jindal's actually on the agenda, on the list, in case anybody needs an emergency exorcism. You know, he's good at that, Piyush is. He's been an advocate for a bill that would require all presidential candidates to release their birth certificate in order to qualify for a spot on the Louisiana presidential ballot. Interestingly, he has not also supported a bill that would compel people to running for president to release tax returns. And Joe Arpaio? Why the hell not? And, oh, God. I still think, and I'd love to hear this Judge Head. No, not Judge Dredd, Judge Head. Judge Head from Lubbock, Texas, who thinks that that Muslim Kenyan with a deep-seated hatred of white people is going to turn our sovereignty over to the UN and their Agenda 21 team, and UN forces are going to invade Lubbock, and we have to be prepared for civil war. Why is this guy not on the agenda? You know what? I think there needs to be a movement in the Republican, the Republican grassroots to let Judge Head speak. I think it would best be accomplished by a few thousand screaming teabaggers hollering at the top of their idiotic lungs, give us head! Give us head! Right? Yeah. And then the nominee himself, Willard, 949 pages, Romney. It was 949, wasn't it? I don't remember. Willard was talking in Commerce, Michigan yesterday afternoon. And he got into the Birther Act, too. Jesus, these people are sleazy.
I love being home in this place where Ann and I were raised, where both of us were born. Ann was born at Henry Ford Hospital. I was born at Harper Hospital.
Not
no one's ever
Hospital?
Asked to see my birth certificate. They know that this is the place.
Ah, okay. I talked over it. My bad.
No one's ever asked to see my birth certificate. They know that this is the place that we were born and raised.
Cheer, you wingnut birther bastards. Good God. That didn't do Michael any good either. He said, screw it. F waiting for next week to violate Godwin's law. I'm just going to say it. The more I think about Romney's Michigan comments, the more I realize they are Hitlerian, period. Standing in front of his childhood Catholic church, screaming in German, pounding his fist, this is mein Vaterland! No one has ever asked to see my papers! Nein! They know my blood is Aryan, not Juden! What's the difference? Asks Michael. Well, I've been pondering that for a while now, and I can't come up with much of one. And as a consequence, yeah, I like Michael's new name for Willard. Mittler. I like it a lot. Works for me. Did I mention that it's Friday on the front porch? Yeah, come on up, kick the dust off your boots. Grab a lemonade or a sweet tea or maybe a cold glass of water out of that pitcher over there with the condensation and the tinkling ice cubes. Or, you know, if you're really in the right frame of mind for it, you can always grab that crockery jug over there with the corn cob stopper and get a swig of the 190, the real deal, straight, no chaser. Dr. John is on the front porch. I've been to Lubbock. The UN can have it. I don't think the UN would take it. That's like the other thing. Robert in Australia Oh, Jesus. Right. Last night, in a moment of smartassery on this program, I hollered, Wolverines! You know, Red Dawn. Son of a gun, if they haven't gone and remade it. And it's being released for Thanksgiving. Because nothing says home for the holidays quite like an imaginary North Korean invasion of the United States. You know, the last time it was the Cubans. Back when Patrick Swayze was yelling Wolverines. Well, now it's the guy who was in the movie Thor. Or so Agnes tells me. And the West Coast gets invaded by North Koreans. Really? North Koreans. And here's the funny part. The North Koreans, after they go all the way across the Pacific Ocean to attack the United States of America, don't stop and actually eat for the first time in 4 years when they get here. No, North Korea conquers the West Coast of the United States. Really? Unless I'm mistaken, I was kind of shocked and saddened to see that Chris Cooper plays the cop daddy role. Coming Thanksgiving 2012. The invasion of the United States under Agenda 21. In a town where, you know, movie phone guy. God almighty. Now, you think I'm kidding, don't you? I'm not. Oh, by the way, Patty wrote in. She said, listening to last night as I'm getting ready to go get tractor parts, and just for funds, I wanted you to know, Dee Snider is a Republican. Yes, it's true. He works at the same Detroit radio station Werby works for, and he's a goner. But even Dee Snider doesn't want Willard to use his songs. Karma. Thanks, Patty. I was kind of guessing that way, but who knew? And this came in yesterday evening, and I didn't know it. I missed the email. You know, there's a lot of them that come in, and I miss a few. But Bill wrote in from Helen, Montana, with a TV update. You might want to be staying away from the game show network at around 7 o'clock, maybe Eastern time on Thursdays. Bill warns us, a pseudo-pop culture update with apologies to David in Maine. Thursdays, 7 o'clock Eastern time on the game show network, the premiere last night of the American Bible Challenge, hosted by... Wait for it, Bill says. The one and only Jeff Foxworthy. If you believe an invisible sky critter god impregnated a little 13-year-old girl and created his son that he then had to murder for the rest of us who really hadn't done anything that bad in the first place, you might be an idiot. Yeah, that Jeff Foxworthy. Bill in Montana notes, we're doomed. Indeed. But no, I'm not kidding. Neither was Robert when he sent along the trailer. I had to watch it and listen to it. You're only going to have to put up with the audio. Coming Thanksgiving 2012. Jesus, I can't believe it. What right-wing POS remade this movie? Honestly, the first one wasn't that good. But there it is. Red Dawn redone. And now probably the thing's not going to work. Come on. Oh, shoot. It'll probably start in the middle of some conversation we're having. Yeah. Yeah, Ray, that's true. You could also use that phrase for Jeff Foxworthy. You know, you're a brain-dead asshole. You might be a brain-dead asshole. Oh, thank heavens, Marty. Marty just checked the cast list for the reimagined Red Dawn Redone. Chris Cooper is not in it. You may now relax, he says. And I will. I like Chris Cooper. Tim from L.A. noting, one more person I'd recommend for the RNC. Neil Horsley, the Christian Republican running for governor. And he's a, yes, he is a mule intercourser. Many of you may have heard that famous exchange between Neil Horsley and Alan Colmes. Is it true? Asked Colmes. Hey, Alan, if you want to accuse me of having sex when I was a fool, I did everything that crossed my mind that looked like I... Alan Colmes, you had sex with animals? Neil Horsley, absolutely, I was a fool. When you grow up on a farm in Georgia, your first girlfriend's a mule. Alan Colmes, I'm not so sure that that's so. You didn't grow up on a farm in Georgia, did you? Squeal like a pig. Remember, you know, just because I'm a hillbilly doesn't mean... Deliverance takes place in Georgia, not West Virginia, not Tennessee, not Virginia. Georgia. Yeah, we can say that word, Lottie, but I try to save the F-bombs for you guys. Because it just feels like I'm showing off if I use them. Oh, dude, I don't know if they show him. This in from Kevin. Hey, Bob. talking about Red Dawn Redone. Hey, Bob. Want to make any bets that the president in the movie will be black? You know, repiglic and realism? Wonder if the movie's being released in time for KJ2's latest rants and threats against the U.S. No telling. Hell, he may be an investor. You just never know. You just never know.
You're in the Air Force, right?
Marines, actually.
How long are you here for?
A few weeks.
Wolverines. Normal American evening. High school football. Unaware of the forces. Power goes out. That threaten our freedom.
Along the entire Northwest Corridor.
Boom, boom.
What's going on?
Airplanes and all kinds of things.
Take care of your breath, you hear me?
Go now.
If you're seeing this broadcast, you are in a part of the country no longer controlled by the government of the United States.
Boys, I love you both. But I want you to do what I would do. Kill this piece of...
No.
They mess with the wrong family.
How did this happen?
There's a new class of weapon. Everything went offline and never came back. They wipe us out, including U.S. Central Command.
What are we supposed to do?
I'm in a fight. Anybody who wants to join is welcome to it. We'll hit them on our terms. We're the Wolverines. We create chaos. We need to steal that weapon. It'd be the foothold we need and take our homes back.
I can.
Yes, you can. Relax. Squeeze. We inherited our freedom. Now it's up to all of us to fight for it.
Yeah, you got that. We inherited our freedom. Right.
Red Dawn.
This is just some place. For us, this is our home.
You know, funny, we don't have any movies about Afghanistan where some Afghan young guy says, for them, this is just a place. For us, this is our home. Oh, wow. Ron and Raleigh follows these kinds of things. He says, Bob, the reboot of Red Dawn, Red Darn, has been sitting on the shelf for about 2 years. Chris Hemsworth made Thor and the Avengers after making Red Dawn. Well, maybe it won't be career suicide then. He also asks, Ron does, if the North Koreans came across the 38th parallel, they'd order takeout. Yeah. By the way, did you know that I'm sitting on top of the 38th parallel? I really am. Runs right through Fayette County, West Virginia. Does that mean I got to worry too? Wolverines. I guess that'll let out all the Ohio State fans from joining the resistance. Is that the implication? Irish Dave is in a rare... Well, Irish Dave's always in a rare form. Did Neil Horsley say how that mule was dressed? You must be thinking about the film version of Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex, What We're Afraid to Ask, with Woody Allen in bed with a sheep wearing lingerie. Lord God, Billy Bob. It may be more than an interesting evening. Yeah, we've got meanness and craziness, and you know, another story of life in the prison industrial complex that'll just make your skin crawl. Got a Steve King update for you. And we have the California method for preventing sexually transmitted diseases. And yes, this. You know, a whole bunch of the country is just absolutely burned up with drought. Some of us wonder why. And we think about things like climate catastrophe and global warming and CO2 parts per million and, you know, nerdy, sciencey stuff like that. Nope. Pat Robertson has the answer.
You know, somehow in this country we feel that we can ignore the laws of God with impunity. And the truth is we can't. God always has the last say. He controls the weather. He controls the rain. And this country is suffering a severe drought. Just think of that. Corn prices are going to about $10 a bushel.
Now wait. Did you catch that? Because I want to make sure you catch that.
Impunity. And the truth is we can't. God always has the last say. He controls the weather. He controls the rain.
You got that? So, all those freaks who wrote all those letters when Malloy suggested that God was dropping tornadoes on his followers and his believers, can we expect an apology now? Because, I mean, the televangelist equivalent of the Pope has just confirmed what Malloy said. God controls the weather. God made the tornadoes that ripped the... You know, we came up through Tornado Alley as we came home from Alabama a couple of months ago, right before the derecho hit us. This is a very pious, godly state. Why would God send a derecho to us? No, but I saw churches that had been absolutely... I mean, it looked like they were made of straw and the big bad wolf had huffed and puffed and blown the sanctuary down. And that derecho beat the piss out of us, out of all the believers here. God controls the weather. Got that?
And this country is suffering a severe drought. Just think of that. Corn prices are going to about $10 a bushel. Soybean prices are on the way up to $20 a bushel, unheard of highs. But this Mississippi thing is going to be very severe. And it just shows we need to do some praying. You know, I was reading about Solomon was saying, when the heavens are shut up and there's no rain and your people call. Well, the heavens have been shut up, and it's time for those folks in the Midwest to start doing some serious praying.
Thanks to the folks at Right Wing Watch who, I don't know if they have to take medication to get through it, but you know, they get it. They are better spirits than I. Those people in the Midwest had better get praying. Does that mean those people in the Midwest haven't been praying? Praying for rain. How about praying for a government that actually takes science seriously and starts working on trying, if possible, to reverse the catastrophic effects of catastrophic climate change? How about that? Maybe. You know, enough with the praying. How about some works? Faith without works is dead. And the works we need is the work of scientists, not gospel sharps. Get praying, Midwesterners. It's your fault. You brought the drought on yourselves. Yeah, I know. It did the same thing to me, Dr. John. God controls the weather? So, he hates the RNC, and Ike is his instrument? Consistency, Pat, says Dr. John. Get praying, Tampa Bay. I'm sorry, Ray. He is. He's the televangelist pope. Well, granted, I mean, he's not a former Nazi anti-aircraft gunner. He's a Korean War-era chief liquor officer. But it's there. Ron and Raleigh, regarding the 38th parallel, Bob, they better not find any coal in North Korea. They have mountains whose tops can be removed. Oh, God. Sandra, where do you find this stuff? Sandra merely writes, help! Headline. Over at Wonkette. RNC official furious at New Mexico governor disrespecting General Custer by meeting Indians. Jim Newell at Wonkette writing, there was this General Custer once who got himself and all his men killed after killing a ton of Indians himself. New Mexico GOP lobbyist and prominent local RNC official Pat Rogers remembers this well. It sears his every moment of consciousness. And he is absolutely furious that New Mexico Governor Susana Martinez agreed to meet with American Indians. Really? I mean, there's a link inside the story to a real news story. America, why your peeps be so dumb? No, from Indian Country, IndianCountry.com. This goober, Pat Rogers, has declared that Governor Susana Martinez has disrespected the memory of Colonel, I thought he was a general, I don't know, George Armstrong, was he promoted posthumously? George Armstrong Custer. killed at the Battle of Little Bighorn, the Greasy Grass, in 1876. Somebody out there actually let Pat Rogers have a law firm. He's a partner with Modral Law Firm in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I knew I should have taken a left lane at Albuquerque. He's a recent addition to the membership of the Repiglic and National Committee Executive Committee. He's a national committeeman with the RNC for his state. He's in Tampa waiting for the rains to come. It is mind-boggling. Subject, New Mexico governor meets with American Indian leaders in tribal state summit. Quislings, French surrender monkeys, secret supporters all along of JAJ. The state is going to hell. Colonel Way, W-E-H, would not have dishonored Colonel Custer in this matter. I hope whoever recommended this is required to read the entire redist transcript and sit through the entire meeting with the governor. Apparently, Colonel Way was the person that Susana Martinez beat in the 2010 New Mexico gubernatorial election. Excuse me, where did the Battle of the Little Bighorn take place? Because I'm real darn sure it wasn't New Mexico. Well, what do we say about, who was it? Colonel, he was a real asshole. Colonel What's-His-Face, who said it was in Colorado, it was the battle, the something-something massacre. Yeah, I know, I'm being a big help here, aren't I? And when they asked the colonel whether the women and children should be spared, he said, kill them all, nits make lice. But there's nothing insulting in that. Sitting down to talk to people whose descendants have been on this continent for around 15,000 years is insulting to the memory of a guy who literally graduated at the bottom of his West Point class, was a total F-up during the Civil War, and couldn't win a battle unless he was fighting women and children. Yeah, it's in Montana. Right, thank you, Marty. The Sand Creek Massacre. Thank you, Dr. John. I knew you'd know. Now, what was the colonel's name? Because I've got it right on the tip of my tongue. Ray, by the way, going backward, he said Judge Head is a great name for a porno movie. Dr. John, a little background on Susana Martinez, who is also a Republican. She's a former district attorney in Doña Ana County, Mexico, where Las Cruces is. Under her watch, there was a man who was held in the local jail there for over a year, if memory serves. Lots of folks said, good honor for that. Yeah, I remember that story. Dr. John notes, and I think he would know, I think he's done some work there. In New Mexico, you must deal with the large native constituency, regardless of your party. Also, there's the tiny matter that the people who wiped out dumbass Custer were not New Mexico Indians. Dr. John closes, Native Americans vote overwhelmingly Democratic, I'm quite happy to say. Colonel Chivington, thank you. Colonel John Chivington, was it? I don't think it was Chester Chivington. Colonel Chivington at the Sand Creek Massacre. Kill them all, nits make lice. You ever notice that Republicans just run around looking for stuff to be mad at? Now, us little progressive people, decent human beings, we like to laugh and joke and carry on and have fun. The Republicans are looking for something to feel outraged about, another sign that the culture's done gone to hell. Oh, Kevin, there's a reason. Preach it, brother, says Kevin. I find it slightly amazing that folks like you and Malloy can quote the gospel probably better than most Christians. Faith without works is dead, and most of these right-wing lunatics have no idea whatsoever that what that means. Love for the least of these, unquestionably mostly as gone as these loonies would like all minorities to be. Question, says Kevin. If all the minorities and left-wingers are gone and it's a right-wing paradise, who will they discriminate against next? Well, see, that's the great question, Kevin, because that's that's the path, that's the primrose path to hell. That's when the real fun religious wars start, after they've gotten rid of all the troublemakers. Because at that point, they're down to that old joke. Oh, what are you? Oh, I'm a Christian. You're a Christian? That's great. What kind of Christian? Baptist. No, you're a Baptist? I'm a Baptist, too. Really? You're a Baptist? Yeah. Hard shell or soft shell? Hard shell Baptist. Oh, I'm a hard shell Baptist, too. Transubstantiation or consubstantiation? Consubstantiation. Really? Me, too. So, do you believe when we rapture, we're going to rapture naked or with our clothes on? Oh, we're rapturing with our clothes on. No, we're rapturing naked. Die, heretic! What, Sandra? Rush Limbaugh's hot 35-year-old fourth wife so mad at you guys. Oh, I can't wait to see this one. It's Friday on the front porch. We just take them on the fly. Oh, God, Irish Dave. George Custer was asking for it. Did you see how he was wearing that fancy arrow shirt? Oh, it must have been a good day at Wonkette. Rebecca Schoenkopf writing, trouble in heaving fat goat paradise? According to your number one news source for political marital disharmony and John Edwards' baby mama travesties, yes, Rush Limbaugh marriage on the rocks, modestly whispers the National Enquirer, owned in part by Bain Capital, I might add, thanks to the disclosure of all those documents. Modestly whispers the National Enquirer headline on its miserable website. And insiders say beloved bride Catherine is ready to walk. It seems Catherine Rush is not taking kindly to being snubbed and lambasted by everyone she's ever met on planet Earth for being bound in holiest matrimony between one flimball and one woman, who, of course, apologized for those two words, you know, slut and prostitute, but not the ideas behind them, namely that every woman come of age since Griswold versus Connecticut is doing sex for money on her back. Here, according to Wonkette, is the excerpt from the National Enquirer. She's furious at the 61-year-old conservative firebrand and threatened to walk out of their marriage if he keeps up his trash talk, say insiders. Rush's big mouth has caused a rift in his fourth marriage, and sources say he's now running for cover from 35-year-old Catherine, a Florida event planner who has apparently gotten out of her pit. Catherine is fit to be tied, said a pal. Well, apparently she got untied because she got out of the pit. She feels as if she's being tarred and feathered. No, that's only lotion. With the same brush that people are using on her husband, she really let him have it. She said she's become a social pariah because of his hot-headed, heedless comments and warned him in no uncertain terms that he'd better keep his trap shut and stop using words like slut for any woman. What's she complaining about? She's married to a multimillionaire, and it's not like she has to see his naked, sweaty body, except on those occasions when he comes down to the pit holding the cat in his arms and screams that he can make her life a living hell. Jesus, who's going to sing at the next Limbaugh wedding? Boy George? The Crying Game would work. Arrow shirt, Irish Dave. You have no shame. From Tim from L.A. Dear Jeebus, We need rain, please. Please let our crops grow so we won't starve. Would you like a sacrifice? Take your son, your only son, yes, Isaac, whom you love so much, and go to the land of Moria. Sacrifice. No, not the mines of Moria. This is not Tolkien. This is the Bible, dadgummit. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains, which I will point out to you. Genesis 22, 1 through 18. Exodus 13, 2. The Lord said, consecrate to me every firstborn that opens the womb among Israelites, both man and beast, for it belongs to me. It. Then there's Leviticus 27, 28, and 29. Note also that any one of his possessions, which a man vows as doomed to the Lord, whether it is a human being or an animal or a hereditary field, shall be neither sold nor ransomed. Everything that is thus doomed becomes most sacred to the Lord. All human beings that are doomed lose the right to be redeemed. They must be put to death. And there's even more. Tim closes, maybe it's time for them Christians to do some human sacrifices so there wouldn't be not only less people, but the carbon footprint would be reduced and lessen the impact of global warming. Good idea? Yeah, but Tim, you know how they think. They'd sacrifice ours, not their own. Because, you know, we're heathens anyway. Fritz from Arkansas in the chat room. I'm personally doubtful of Limbaugh being 100% hetero. Well, Fritz, I'm personally doubtful of Limbaugh being any percentage hetero. I mean, why else do you have an illicit prescription for Viagra that you're taking with you on an all-boys weekend to the Dominican Republic, home notoriously of little boy prostitution? Yeah, see? And Mr. Gibson was quick on the draw with the same observation. Oh, what a night this looks like it's going to be. Light up the phones. It's Friday on the front porch, like I said. Get something cool to drink, prop your feet up, and let's get the conversation going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello, Edward.
Yeah. My goodness, I didn't know I would be on so fast.
Well, I hate keeping people on hold, and I just looked over here and realized I'd been filibustering all over you, so I apologize.
No, I love it. Anyway, you know the guy, the judge out in Lubbock named Ed. Too bad his first name isn't Richard. Then we could shorten it.
Oh, wouldn't that be delightful? What is his first name? Do we know?
Tom.
Oh.
I'd rather call him Dick.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe his middle name's Richard.
Well, we have a very dear friend, Olya. She's from Russia, and she and her husband met at a university there, and they were married. And she's been here in this country for a long time. She's an artist and lives in Houston. And her husband is a computer whiz. And he had two wonderful jobs offered him. One was in Siberia and one was in Lubbock. And Olya told him, she says, if you take the Siberia job, I'm divorcing you. Anyway, they moved to Lubbock. And I told Olya, I said, well, Olya, I hate to tell you this, but here in Texas, we consider Lubbock to be the Siberia of Texas.
And help me with my Texan geography, Edward. I got a general idea of where Dallas is and where Houston is. Where, I know where Amarillo is. Where is Lubbock?
South of Amarillo.
Not getting much better, are we?
Nope. Oh, my. I have a cousin. No, I don't anymore. Bless her heart, she died. Who lived in Amarillo for years and years. I was listening the other night when Juanita was on talking about all the trouble she had to get her ID and everything.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, I guess in 2012 it's not, Edward, but yeah.
Yeah, it's not. And, you know, I don't complain about my ailments or anything, but I basically am housebound. I have to have help to get in and out of the house. And I can't walk down the steps. Steps are real bad for me. and I walking across the street and getting up and down on the curb. Of course, the bus goes right by my house. I could get out there and jump on it and go right downtown. But I can't do that. So my partner got me out of the house and into the car. The Democratic office here in Dallas told me I didn't need a photo ID. But I thought, I know Texas. I'm going to get it. So anyway, we got down there and went to the place where you get the Texas Highway, wherever, where you get your driver's license. And, of course, my driver's license had expired. I don't drive anymore. And there's no way I could have gotten out of this house, gone over across the street, up across the curb, and get in a bus and go downtown and walk four blocks to this place. And then walk four blocks back and come back home. I could not do it. No way. But anyway, we went down there and I went in. There was a long line. I had to fill out these papers and everything. We sat there for 3 hours. And then I was called and I went in. And I think it took a total of 10 minutes to get this photo ID. The lady took all the information off of my expired driver's license. And that was all right. And then they took my picture, and away we went again. But then we had to come all the way home. If I'd gone there on my own, I'd had to walk four blocks to get on the bus, come home and get off the bus, all that stuff. And I think I had it pretty easy.
By comparison, I hate to say it, but I think you did.
I know I did. I know I did. Good grief. You know? There is a Texas group known for voter intimidation, and its headquarters in Houston.
Is it the Klan?
Probably close to it. It's already in 35 states now. Thought I'd just drop that bombshell.
Just wow. Do you, I mean, seriously, do you know the name of it?
No, I don't. But I'll find out if I can and let you know.
My goodness gracious. I'm not sure if Irish Dave's being funny or for real. He just noted that on his long form, Rick Perry's name is James Richard. So in South Houston, he'd be Jimmy Dick. In West Texas, like, say, Lubbock, he'd be J.R.
It probably is. Well, you know, there have been more people executed under Rick Perry than any other governor.
And George Bush is so mad about that. He thought his record was going to last a lifetime.
I know. Well, it didn't. Rick Perry's got the prize. I don't know what the prize will be. I know what I'd like to give him. A wild goose one half inch off center. With the handle of a garden hoe.
Get him, Edward. Get him.
I'll get him. Y'all take care.
You too. Have a wonderful weekend, Edward.
Thank you.
Bye now. Calling from Texas, our buddy Edward. 1/2 inch off center. I'd have been okay with everything but the 1/2 inch off center. Oh, God, maybe we are going to giggle a little bit tonight. I certainly hope so. Ron and Holly responding to Tim from L.A.'s email. Burnt offerings. Hey, Bob, I like a tangy barbecue sauce on my burnt offering. If you watch the grill closely, those offerings won't get so badly burnt. Well, you know, I mean, but Edward just called from Texas, and down that way they like their burnt ends. Yeah, it's Friday. It's definitely Friday. Slow on the driveway. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
A couple of things I wanted to say. I've got a solution for the Republicans about of course, I dreamed this up when I stayed awake the other night, you know. Anyway, so I'm running by you about what to do about the rape victims that don't want to have the babies.
Uh-huh.
I think that if they value that life so much that all the women and their husbands should volunteer their bodies and their wives' bodies to take, you know, transfer that.
Absolutely. Right. Surrogate gestation.
Yeah. Yeah. If they really love those little babies, as one woman said on...
Just think of it as a snowflake transplant, Juanita.
Yeah. As one woman said, I think it was today on the Washington Journal, you liberals, you kill those little babies. You kill those little babies. You kill those little babies. I'll never be a Democrat. I'll always be a Republican as long as you. Little liberals, you liberals kill those little babies.
Delicious with sweet taters.
But I think I think that's the thing, and I wonder if somewhere I can spread it around.
Now, see, you're working that side of the street, Juanita, and I want to just let you spread it around. Now, careful there. I mean, you've got a reputation to hold up there.
Like what?
Well, no, it's okay. No, I'm just kidding. It's Friday. I'm
getting other things that I read on my Facebook, and I hooked up with the Horn Radio. Is that the one I'm supposed to hook up with?
Yeah, Head On Radio Network on Facebook.
Did you?
Or
find
the
it?
Horn? The Horn.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah, Betsy keeps an eye on that. So anything needs doing, she generally does it. I don't think I've even got the password to get into the page.
I had a new one today. Want to respond to, it said that no Christian should smoke pot. And,
well, that'll draw a couple responses, seeing as how the anointing oil was like hemp oil or something, I think, in the old days.
Well, I had a lot. I mean,
they'd dribble that stuff down over David's head and he'd go, dude, you know.
A lot of people, didn't think that was right. Instead, like for cancer patients and all, and
well, but see that what you're talking about there, Juanita, is remember there is a persecution complex inside evangelical fundamentalist phony baloney Christianity, and they like for people to suffer just like Jesus did. Now, see, there's a lot to be read in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, which is the only part of the New Testament I ever read. John's just like this hallucinatory thing. But Matthew, Mark, and Luke, you know, there's a lot of stuff in there, but at no point in time does he suggest that it's really cool for poor people to suffer. And yet, for some reason or another, these evangelical fundamentalist phony baloney types, they think it is. And that's what tells me that they're not well. You know what I mean? I'm trying to be as gentle as I can, Juanita.
Well, I said, one thing I said about the smoking pot, I said it's better than taking Oxycontin.
Yeah, and how many condemnations were there of Flush Flimball? Zero? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. But, yeah, so far there's a lot of liberalness on there, and always before, most of the stuff I've run into with when I first went online was a bunch of right-wingers. I remember one of them told me I was brainwashed.
Well, they just haven't found you yet, because as soon as they do, they'll start working on their Nikola Post stuff, you know, the Republicans get paid to post.
I remember one I told, see, I got hooked into that. I didn't know what else to do when I first got online, and I got those idiotic talk things. I didn't know what else to do, you know, ignorant of the web. Anyway, this one guy told me that I was brainwashed, and I said, well, I'll agree with you to a certain extent that I have been brainwashed, but I'm getting over it. What about you? You know.
God bless you, Juanita. That's, yeah.
But anyway.
I'm getting over it.
Another thing is that I wanted to say about it. If you ever listen to, what's his face? Wants to be vice president.
Paul Ryan.
Yeah. He'll say something, and he'll say, and that's it, or something like that. What did he say? I wrote it down one time. It's like, I said it, now that's it. That's no more to be said about it.
Who does he think he is, Pharaoh? Let it be written, let it be done.
Have you noticed that about him?
Oh, yeah, he's completely subsumed in belief in his own press.
Yeah, yeah. And you heard him, where they...
He's a great guy. Just ask him. He'll tell you.
Yeah, right. Have you heard him play his speech about when he came out for the war against Iraq?
No.
Yeah, I've been hearing them. They're playing it on some places, and it's a doozy. They talk about, you know, that Saddam Hussein was, you know, just so evil, you know, just the most evil thing, you know. Well, there's a lot of evil in this world, and I think some of them are worse than him, or than he was. I know a couple over here.
Yeah.
And one more thing, did you get my email about the Irish mayor?
Yeah, I did. I've gotten that from two or three people. And what
have you heard it?
Yes, I have.
I love it.
What a delight that was to hear. And you know, forgive me, I love an Irish accent.
Oh yeah.
And just hearing that gentleman, he took that teabagger, whoever it was, and tied him in a knot.
Yes, he did. And I was looking at the comments, and much of the comments liked him. And some of them said, well, he just didn't give a chance for the teabagger to say anything. Well, who cares?
What did the teabagger have to say in the first place? Well, what has a teabagger ever had to say?
Right. They say what they want to say when they want to say it, and it's time somebody told them to shut up, or made them shut up.
I agree.
I love that guy.
You know what? I think I need to run the clip maybe after the our conversation. Juanita.
Okay, I'll hang up and let you do that.
Oh well, okay. Well, Juanita, you have yourself a wonderful.
I think those are some of my little things I wanted to tie up.
Okie doke. Well, we will talk next week.
Oh, by the way, one thing, I had to call my insurance company, and they're claiming. I was asking them. I had to call them about. Getting my rides and all straightened out and all that kind of stuff and my medication. And I said, have they approved it yet? And they told me they hadn't received any requests.
Oh, golly.
So
you got to stay on top of them like a duck on a June bug.
Yeah, so I contacted, I had to leave a message with the doctor's office because they were probably in surgery, and it being Friday. So I just left a message with them and told me I needed to call them and tell them that they hadn't got it.
Mercy sakes. Stay after it. Stay after it.
I will.
All right, Juanita, have a wonderful weekend, dear.
You too.
All right.
You going to play that now, huh?
I'm going to play that right now.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Bye now. What Juanita is talking about, and that, of course, was Juanita, what Juanita was talking about, this is actually a clip from 2010. I don't know how it got overlooked for so long, but it is Michael D. Higgins, elected president of Ireland last year, and he is taking, I mean, this is surgical. Death by a thousand cuts. Hate to use that kind of imagery, but it is. He's talking to some right-wing teabag and freak named Michael Graham. And this is the clip that everyone's talking about. I've gotten it from two or three folks, but it is magnificent.
I spoke about my time in the Midwest. I'm going to the Greyhound bus station and hearing for the first time the phrase poor white trash. Mm-hmm. These people, who, you know, I was there just before the Civil Rights Charter came in, and frankly, The idea that a person would not have one job, but have two jobs or three jobs and work all the light hours that are there and still not be entitled to the basic protection of fundamental care is so outrageous. So whether you agree with Obama and what he is doing in aspects of his foreign policy, and I might disagree with some things about Latin South America, but one of the things I do agree, the idea of there being a social floor below which people wouldn't fall, that's the future. I think even the poorest people in the great country that is the United States should be entitled to basic health care. Okay. And I don't think they'll thank the Sarah Palin lookalikes and followers for taking it off them. You're about as late a rival in Irish politics as Sarah Palin is in American politics. And both of you have the same tactic. The tactic is to get a large crowd, whip them up, try and discover what is the greatest fear, work on that, and feed it right back. And you get frenzy. And that leads you in time then to when you have, in fact, maybe the most gifted president-elect, I happen not to agree with all his foreign policy, but you know, you regard, for example, someone who happens to have been a professor at Harvard as somehow or another handicapped. You don't find anything wrong at all with this Tea Party ignorance that has been brought all around the United States, well, which is regularly insulting people who have been democratically elected.
Deputy Higgins, I'm not going to insult you.
Oh, I think you should.
By bringing up your lack of knowledge of the Tea Party movement. Other than
I lived in the United States, and you know one of the interesting things, Mike? Do you know the big difference as I listened? Mm-hmm. I lived in the Midwest, in Willie Nelson country. I was a student there at the end of the 60s. I was a professor in Illinois the end of the 70s. Mm-hmm. The magnificent, decent, generous people of the United States with whom I had supper. People I sat around there and ate homemade ice cream with them. The difference between them and the tiny elite who are in charge of warmongering foreign policy of the United States is just enormous. So therefore, when you go on your picnic around the country, you're really not representing the decent United States people who are very proud, correctly, of the person they've elected president, which they're entitled to do. But you have the neck to say that people like me, who are willing to talk to people who are at each side trying to build peace, are somehow or another in favour of people who want to murder Jewish people. Right. That is an outrageous statement. I am not anti-Semitic. I am not in favour of murder. And unlike you, I make my profession in politics, and I worked in human rights, and I condemned Hamas for sending rockets. None of that will matter to you. Because you know what you want? I mean, I wish you well. Keep drinking Guinness and keep ranting away. But don't suggest that those of us who are working for peace in the heat of the day are somehow interested in murdering Jews. Okay. There's a man in the United States, you know him. I think you may have interviewed him. Mark B. Klein. He represents 14 Jewish organizations in New York. He organized 45 members of the House of Representatives to sign a letter condemning Barack Obama for giving Mary Robinson the Medal of Honor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was debating with him on a program rather like this. And I said to him, how can you conclude that Mary Robinson is anti-Semitic? And he said, I said, Bishop Tutu, for example. Bishop Tutu is anti-Semitic as well. You're going down that road. And really it is very dangerous stuff. The fact of the matter is, look, young people from the United States are traveling all over the world again. They're welcome in Europe. They're backpackers in hostels. People are talking to them because the image of the United States we've got away from this warmongering is getting better. At least 47 million people that the likes of you condemn to no health care in a country that I was proud to work in. These people are going to have some health care. Okay. So this is the issue. So therefore, be proud to be a decent American rather than be just a wanker whipping up fear.
Yeah.
A wanker whipping up fear. That may... phrases like, you've got the neck to say, and... those of us who labor in the heat of the day, and a wanker whipping up fear. I like that guy. Pity I can't get him on the show. Jack in Shreveport says, this is probably the fourth time I've listened to this clip, and I have not tired of it at all. Neither have I. It's just fun to hear one of these teabagging horses' asses get same-handed to him. It's about 10 minutes past the hour. The lines are open, 877-443-2366. If you're new to the program, we have never lost a new caller. We've never had to dial 911, and then, yeah, we've got a talk show caller fainted on the floor, and no, we've never had it. You're welcome to join in. The direct dial number is 304-658-3333, and let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, it's John. I'm sorry. I'm blown away by that clip. It's going to take me a second to recover.
That's okay. Take a breath. It did the same thing to me.
Wow. That was incredible. Oh, my God. Anyway, I'm calling from North Carolina, or as I think Tracy said the other night, North Crackalina, something like that.
Yeah, or as Reverbo would say, below the possum line.
I prefer behind the Waffle House curtain, which is pretty good for me. It's good to hear from you. I'm a little blown away that we're still fighting the battle of Little Bighorn here.
Didn't do me. I mean, that was perfectly timed for Friday. I mean, Sandra has a magnificent sense of the absurd for a day that we kind of dedicate to the absurd. But really, Little Bighorn. I mean, I understand they refight Gettysburg, and I understand that they get mad about the siege of Vicksburg, and you know, if only, and they don't even talk about Chickamauga and the Iron, and you know, the Wisconsin Iron Brigade. No, but really, Little Bighorn, John?
Well, I guess so, and I mean, there's been so much correction to the early stories, you know, that the image of the Last Stand and up on the hill and. The Indians at the time, they said, the battle, it was over, in less time than it takes a hungry man to eat a meal. And, we've done some archaeology up there, and it turns out that's probably a lot closer to the truth, than this heroic image, much like the Alamo, I would say.
Well, you're familiar with the film, Little Big Man, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah.
The great actor, what was his name, that played Custer throughout that film. Never countermand a Custer decision. Hire the mule skinner. And at Custer's end, when he's standing up on that little knoll screen, you know, Mr. President, you're drunk! Yeah. Because that's the thing. Custer really did have presidential ambitions. He'd gotten to where, well, he'd been reading his own press too, John.
Yeah, and that's always a dangerous thing. I wanted to say I felt like I was a little bit conjured last night when you were talking. I think the guy's name was Harry.
Yeah, Harry.
Who called it? Really awesome call. Really, really super interesting. And I just wanted to sort of validate what you guys were saying. Darwin, that's kind of in my wheelhouse, you know, and I've mentioned to you before that we get into a lot of trouble when we, try to take, what he wrote about natural selection and sort of, he didn't know about genetics, but what we would call genetics today and the way, you know, genes reproduce. And we try to map that onto culture, and we get into a lot of trouble. And, you know, you even see reverberations of that in Romney's whole thing with the Palestinians and their cultural handicap and all that. So it gets real ugly real quick, and I wanted to say you guys were spot on with your discussion of that.
Well, thank you, because that was when the phrase social Darwinism came out of Harry's mouth, and I got an idea of where he was going. And we were both on the same page. The first thing I thought of was the discussion that you and I had about the amygdala research. You know, this notion that we can just write off all right-wingers as being horses' asses, which many of them are, simply because of a brain, you know, they've got bad brains.
Right, and you got to be careful with that because, you know, what I would argue is that, you know, maybe there's some of that, but it's much more about sort of... their cultural setting and their upbringing and reading Ayn Rand one too many times in high school, et cetera, you know.
Right. Or the people who, or in school, the people who open their minds and pour, and there are teachers out there who open minds and pour in poison.
Yeah.
Children, I can't put it on the reading list, but I really don't think your education's complete until you've read Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead and Lorax. Well, no, the Lorax would actually be good, wouldn't it? But it all does contribute, and the search is it just a human trait, John, that we want to find not a cluster of causation but a cause? Is it kind of a transference from physics over to social sciences, you know, because the physicists are always looking for the tiniest particle, the basic particle, the particle that stops here. And we want to do that in the social sciences, too?
Yeah, sure. And the problem is that, you know, the root problem with you know, studying human behavior and human culture is that we're messy. We don't, excuse me, we don't behave like Adam, you know. We're not subject to the same kind of natural laws. We're not as predictable. You know, we're not random either, but so it's very difficult, and it's very difficult to try to, you know, take something like what Darwin was talking about descent with modification and try to apply that to culture. You know, it's we're not in these neat little boundaries and categories. And when you run into someone who tries to talk about neat little boundaries and categories and single explanations, chances are you're dealing with someone who either hasn't sat through a class like mine or is coming from a very conservative social position. That's where this attempt to talk about social Darwinism and, you know, looking way more at Spencer than at Darwin, that's where that comes from. You're almost always dealing with someone who is politically very conservative and is trying to find some scientific rationale for their belief.
And therein lies trouble.
Yeah.
Now that's different, is it not, from, say, was it the study out at the University of California that tracked a bunch of children from kindergarten up to adulthood, and they found that the fussiest children in kindergarten turned into conservatives when they were grown up? That's a different analysis, isn't it?
Well, it might be. I think I remember hearing about that, but I think what I would imagine is that, again, being more fussy or more authoritarian or more rule-bound, you know, is the kind of thing that is probably, you know, if it's something that manifests in a child, for instance, then it is reinforced by parents and by teachers and by authority figures in different ways that sort of tracks them into the kinds of jobs or the kinds of reading or the kinds of learning or the kinds of social interactions that would lead them into being conservative.
And I don't think, based on what I remember of the reading, I don't remember reading that they were controlled for socioeconomic background. For instance, you know, concepts of privilege, I think you'll agree, John, concepts of privilege attach fairly early, do they not?
Yeah, they do.
So if you've got a well-to-do little cranky white girl who's fussy in preschool and grows up to be a cranky, fussy, right-wing authoritarian conservative, they were kind of programmed that way before they ever got to the schoolroom doors, right?
Yeah, because the fussiness would have been sort of coddled, you know, mollycoddled and reinforced by parents who said, all right, well, you're going to scream, all right, well, here's the cookie then. You know, so that's the reinforcement of, you know, if I'm a jerk, then I will get what I want, as opposed to someone who might take the kid aside and say, look, you know, you can't have the cookie because Susie over there needs a cookie too, so you can't have two, you have to have one, and you have to share, and you have to learn how to deal with people in your social group, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, that involves maybe sometimes not taking more than you get, you know, not taking more than you're allotted. You know, you can't have it all. Even if you want it all, sometimes someone else has to have one. And, you know, it's sort of that constant reinforcement by, you know, again, parents and peers and authority figures, et cetera, that I would suggest, and I'm kind of talking off the cuff here, you know, because this isn't really my thing, but it seems like that would be a much more reasonable explanation, and something that childhood longitudinal study you're talking about might really be implying, as opposed to it's hardwired in the brain, you know.
Isn't it, I was going to ask another question, but no, you got email. Ron and Raleigh wants you to know, welcome to North Crackalacky. North Cackalacky.
North
Cackalacky.
Nice.
Yeah, so.
Excellent. Well, I'm enjoying, I'm feeling right at home. It actually looks a lot like where I grew up in Southeast Texas, weirdly. The humidity is the same anyway.
Yeah, I saw your comment on your Gmail contact. You know, hello humidity, my old friend.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Air, well, you can wear. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's great to hear from you. I missed about the first 10 minutes. How are we doing on fundraising?
We are $515 from making this month's goal and beating the Swede in the process.
all right, well, we got 5 days left in August next week, not counting this one.
Right.
So maybe we
can, the other promise outstanding is that if we can close that off early, there will not be a word about fundraising for as many days or less.
Well, so that argues for wrapping it up today or Monday, because we all hate to hear it, you know, but we got to hear it. So.
Yeah, I wish there was another way, but the other way is for me to go out there and try to get, you know, fun ads for, I don't know, Grumman aircraft that blow up brown people or something. And, you know, I think that would be a bit of an ethical and moral compromise for the tenor of the program, don't you, John?
Well, it would be, and I got to tell you, you know, I like listening to radio where people are discussing things, and from what I can tell, my only other option here is about a six-tier Limbaugh clone that I heard one morning and lasted about 3 seconds on, you know, so this is something we
got
to support.
Sixth tier? Oh, my God.
It was bad. It wasn't quite to read in the newspaper. Maybe fifth tier. I might bump him up, but It was pretty.
You know, I'm not going to put it out to the Horn family generally, but if you really want to hear 19th tier right wingery, I'll have to see if I can find you the link for the genius who gave us, via Jim, of course, who gave us Titanic plates. You really haven't lived, and he's a newspaper reader.
I got you. This is Titanic Tuesday guy, and oh my God, how do those girl bikini bottoms stay on? It's that guy.
That guy, yes.
Excellent. All right. I would give that a listen.
Yeah, for about 3 seconds.
Right.
You'll either fall asleep or run screaming from the room. So everything's working out down in North Kakalaki now, and you settled in and feeling comfortable, and gosh, not that far from the beach. And
yeah, no, it's not bad. I gotta say, just real quickly, I'll let you go. I don't know if you know about that Beloit College. I think that's how you say it. Study every year about the new entering freshman class and sort of.
Yeah, I'm familiar. Is the new one out?
Yeah, it came out I think a couple days ago, and it was just. I mean, you could Google it and find it, but two things really struck me. One is that the kids who are freshmen this year, 18-year-olds. They've never lived in a world where Kurt Cobain was alive.
Whoa.
And, yeah, I know, right? And a good portion of them were born after Pulp Fiction. And those two things just made me feel like such an old man, you know?
That's amazing. Yeah, it's called the Mindset List.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, new one came out. So, yeah, give that a look. You might, more of them might spark your interest, but those were the two that struck me.
So the okay, well I will. I'm gonna they've got it numbered kind of funny. Would I want the 2016 list because that's the graduating class of 2016?
Yeah, it's the class of 2016. That would be the one, and it dropped with this week, I believe. Maybe when Tuesday or Wednesday, I think. When most classes start. I mean, despite all that, in my sort of early impression of kids here in Wilmington, they seem sharp, engaged. I'm seeing, you know, lots of good sort of progressive stickers. There's a little College Republicans kiosk here on the quad, and nobody was there. Nobody was there. So
wow.
I have high hopes for them.
I love this list. I mean, just the thing I just ran across is for them. Robert De Niro has always been the cranky in-law on Meet the Fockers, not Vito Corleone.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know, right? I know. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Bill Clinton is a senior statesman of whose presidency they have little knowledge.
Right.
Michael Jackson's family, not the Kennedys, constitutes American royalty.
I know. They have no clue what VHS is. But, you know.
Careful, John, or in a minute you're going to be hollering at him to get off your lawn.
Oh, I know. I'm already.
You're a young guy. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, feeling super old. but anyway, it's great talking to you. I'm glad you're about the fundraising, and let's push it, folks. I'm going to do what I can. But love to everybody, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Good luck, and enjoy the new digs and the new environs, John.
Definitely.
Take care.
Take care, Bob.
Bye now.
Goodbye.
Dr. John calling from North Carolina. Yeah, the Beloit mindset list. the mindset for the class of 2016. If they miss the Daily Show, they can always get their news on YouTube. Their lives have been measured in the fundamental particles of life, bits, bytes, and bauds. They have never seen an airplane ticket. The paradox too big to fail has been for their generation what we had to destroy the village in order to save it was for their grandparents. They can't picture people actually carrying luggage through airports rather than rolling it. And here's one. Oh, now that, and for those of you who are sort of tapped into sports and stuff, this is the class of 2016. There has always been football in Jacksonville, Florida, but never in Los Angeles. They've grown up with MP3s and iPods. They never listen to music on the car radio and really have no use for radio at all. Hello, future. We're here on the internet web tubes. Yeah. Since they've been born, the United States has measured progress by a 2% jump in unemployment and a 16% rise in the price of a first-class postage stamp. Does an entering freshman starting school like right now realize how far behind the eight ball they are? Do they realize that electing Willard Romney is not going to help and that the chance of Barack Obama being able to help is pretty damn narrow too? Their folks have never gazed with pride on a new set of bound encyclopedias on the bookshelf. And this one, this speaks to a particularly southern element. Because growing up, you know, I knew girls are, no. Exposed bra straps have always been a fashion statement, not a wardrobe malfunction to be corrected quietly by well-meaning friends. Some of the young women I ran around with referred to girls with their bra straps showing out from under their tank tops as Teener and Tammy. Yeah. A significant percentage of them will enter college already displaying some hearing loss. Thank you, earbuds. The real world has always stopped being polite and started getting real on MTV. Women have always piloted warplanes and space shuttles. White House security has never felt it necessary to wear rubber gloves when gay groups have visited. Having made the acquaintance of Furby at an early age, remember Furby? They have expected their toy friends to do ever more unpredictable things. Outdated icons with images of floppy disks for save, a telephone for phone, and a snail mail envelope for mail have oddly decorated their tablets and smartphone screens for reasons they don't fully understand. Star Wars has always been just a film, not a defense strategy. They've had to incessantly remind their parents not to refer to their CDs and DVDs as tapes. There have always been blue M&Ms, but no tan ones. Billy Graham is as familiar to them as Otto Graham was to their parents. That says, and it goes on like that. It's Friday on the Front Porch. It is dedicated to conversation, whether you would take it, and let's go to the phones and find out where it goes next. Hey, welcome to the program. Dang. I hate that. Mr. Burns has replaced J.R. Ewing as the most shot-at man on American television. They know many established film stars by their voices on computer-animated blockbusters. History's always had its own channel. I guess you could extend that to say that on the History Channel, there have always been stories about aliens building pyramids in the Yucatan Peninsula. Yeah. So we've reached the halfway point of the evening thus far. And you're welcome to get involved. I hesitate to even address because it seems like such an act of futility. The shooting this morning in New York. Just another crazy man, right? He was crazy. Only problem was, until he pulled the trigger. And we need, okay, I'm going to do this. We do need to remember that with all of these killers, up until the moment that they pulled the trigger, they were the beloved, law-abiding gun owners that the NRA, the National Repiglick and Rifle Association, loves to tout so dearly. It takes only a microsecond to transform law-abiding gun owner, you know, like the 30 that I told you about last night who descended on a library in Virginia to demand their right, damn it, their right to carry a gun into the library, because you never know when you're going to have to pick off a bad guy back in the stacks trying to make off with a copy of Little Women. And I know we've had notes from them the past few nights, and we know from past history as well. I know that we have a substantial international audience, and this is another one of those moments. When you hear about 30 gun-toting idiots descending on the public library... Now, this is not a question about, you know, what do you think of America, an America where 30 gun-toting maniacs descend on the public library and compare themselves to African-American slaves. Don't want to know that. What I want to know is what would happen to your world. What would happen to your sense of something approaching decent society if people in your countries were carrying death engines, because that's what firearms are, into, I consider a library a sacred space. What would you think? What would happen to your... How would you react? What would the people of your country think if you had a sizable movement with tremendous political clout that could demand that librarians tolerate the presence of firearms in a place dedicated to the acquisition of knowledge? This morning in New York City, the number of handgun deaths, two, was it? I don't know. Exceeded the number of firearms deaths in a great number of countries. Last night, in Chicago, in the space of 30 minutes, 19 people were shot, exceeding in 30 minutes in one segment of one city of the United States of America the firearms injuries of the country, of a majority of the countries in the so-called developed world. Chicago, in case you haven't noticed, is damn near burning with firearm violence. But remember, that law-abiding gun owner was just crazy. That law-abiding gun owner had been out of work for a year. Can you imagine looking at your gun for a year thinking, that's not the solution? and it's there the next day, and you... No, that's not the solution. Still sitting there the third day. No, really, it's not the solution. I need a beer. Your unemployment runs out. Nowhere to go because you can't participate in the free market economic miracle of consumerism. And I don't know what. 51 weeks later, you know what? My God, that's the solution. There are 10 patients, 4 minor injuries, 4 not urgent, 2 dead in New York. The gunman killed his former co-worker before he opened fire on bystanders. But it has nothing to do with the economy. 53 years old, Jeffrey Johnson. Fired from a design job designing women's accessories, you know, belts, bangles, bracelets, at Hazen Imports. He was downsized. And he took it out on people who had no more power than he. He didn't take it out on the people who downsized him. He took it out on people who survived the downsizing. It was just another day in America. How does the rest of the world live without the freedom of being able to be gunned down by a firearm-toting, law-abiding Second Amendment revering citizen? How do you guys get by from day to day? It reminds me of that clip we played from the newsroom. Freedom and freedom. Just keep it that way. Jesus. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
How are you?
I'm well, Jim. How are you?
Pretty good.
What's happening this fine Friday?
Well, I sent you an email that you didn't read about one of our local boys being at the Republican convention.
Oh, really? I was out for a little while today. Who's gone down to Tampa?
Read your email. I just sent it.
Oh, where? I'm looking.
Yeah, Rick Snuffer, who's supposing Ray Hall is going to do a thing on coal.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Tuesday at 8 o'clock. Thought you'd love to hear it.
Is he going to be on the television and everything?
Absolutely. He's simply gone straight to the top of a... I guess the feeding chain or whatever they want to call it down there.
Front feet in the trough and a mouthful of acorns.
Oh, that's just going to be lovely.
Amazing.
By the way, your buddy over there and you know, the one you love so much.
Hey, you throw that around real easy, like.
I know. I'm so wicked. But anyway... He has this problem when he starts yelling at people who disagree with him. And I just disguised my voice and asked him if he had ever heard of Tourette's syndrome.
Did he have an answer? Did it have anything to do with geology or geography or the flow of rivers? Or isn't that French, Tourette's? Something makes you surrender?
I think he finally caught on to who it was and said, I'd look it up. And then they had some guy on there who was going on about interracial marriage. And at that point, I had to.
Really? Interracial marriage has made it to the... Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. And how that was just against the laws of God and man and this, that, and the other. And And, oh, God, he was going on about a black woman being seen with a white man or a white man being seen with a black woman, and it was just, it was even too much for Steve-O.
Really? He pushed back?
Yeah, he had to push back on that one. And then there was some type of discussion about animals and stuff like this and how they don't crossbreed. And, you know, like I say, I can only take so much of this. I had to disengage.
Oh, I would, too. You're taking one for the team there, Jim.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that thing in New York was really bad this morning. But, I mean, you know, what can I say? People are, you know, we're going back to the days of Al Capone and back to the 60s.
Well, I mean, Jim, you're a pretty sharp knife in the drawer. Can you explain to me why these Virginians need to take a gun to the library?
No. As a matter of fact, I was just thinking about on my days as a graduate student when I had a call in the back of McKissick Library at the University of South Carolina. The wildest thing I ever saw back there were people having sex.
Well, I thought that's part of a library's mission, isn't it? I mean, nerds have to write. Well, I should.
These were just people who apparently, like I say, I would feel much, I wasn't really intimidated by it. As a matter of fact, it was amusing, and in some cases, it was quite enjoyable to be, to know that it was going on. Make love, not war, but nonetheless, as far as taking guns into a library, it's kind of strange. I guess my era is so far into the departed that, there's just a new thing in town. I don't know what it is. But, I can remember the worst thing that ever happened to the library were people who would throw books out of a window so they could steal them and not check them out. And, of course, some people elected to play the rang-dang-do back in the stacks, which is fine with me. It never bothered me. But
well, maybe that's what it is. Maybe we need people with guns in libraries to stop that book theft.
Oh, I don't know about that, Bob. I mean, that's just absolutely insane. I mean, people are getting to the point that they think it's comme il faut to to always be packing. I mean, like I say, we're going back to some type of Al Capone mentality.
Well, the other statistic I had was that how many teabaggers is it? 55% of teabaggers surveyed think that they have a God-given right to carry a gun into church. I mean, aren't there in our culture of the great Western film, Jim? Aren't there films where there's a confrontation between the peaceful man of God who says, "I'm sorry, mister, you're going to have to leave your peacemaker here at the door. You can't enter the house of God armed to the teeth."
Well, I thought that was what it was all about. Excuse me, but, why should you need to be packing when you go into a worship service?
I mean, did the most pious Christian king of France carry a sword into Saint-Denis?
Probably not.
I would think not.
If so, it was ceremonial, but, I mean, not for actual combat, but, I mean...
I assume that some of these teabaggers, this 55%, simple concepts of demographics suggest that some of them would be Roman Catholic. Does this mean that they feel like they should be able to carry a gun into St. Peter's?
Well, one did back in May of 1981 when they shot the Pope.
Yeah.
I mean, but of course that was a different thing. Like I say, when I hear this stuff, I have a problem in processing it mentally. And sometimes I guess my mental processes interfere with my speech and ability to surface my reaction to it, but I don't understand it. I mean, I've seen guns in some of the other places where they were appropriate, but not in church and not in libraries and other places like that. I just don't understand what I'm trying to say is I don't understand the compensatory actions or feelings there. And I'm not a psychologist, so I can't explain it through any means of that nature, but I just don't understand it. Because I know what guns can do. And they're not for ornamentation. They're not part of the dress code. They are machines designed to throw bullets. And when you are on the receiving end of said machine, it's not a very pleasant experience. And I think they just got away from that. Or have they become so hardened and so inured to the consequences of their actions that they simply don't care? And there's some type of...
Well, look at that guy in Florida. And I'm not talking about the one who shot Trayvon Martin. There's another one. And when he was arrested for murdering an individual, he said, "What are y'all so upset about? All I did was kill an N-word."
God, yeah, that's been around so long. I mean, you know, it's... I remember when I first heard about the man that was dragged behind a vehicle. Remember that one?
Oh, yes.
And I simply could not understand man's inhumanity to man and to treat another human being that way. I mean, there are people that I dislike intensely, and there are people that I despise, but, you know, nothing would push me into a situation accepting self-defense to hurt or harm another human being. I mean, I've played my share of practical jokes and tricks, and I talked about that privately. But, I mean, not to harm a person and not to deprive them of their life. That means of conflict resolution off the battlefield with me cannot compute.
Well, you know, I think we have to take this in context, Jim. And the context is, while it is not necessarily clearly organized, people with guns have been whipped into a white, emphasis on the word white, hot frenzy. And with the Virginia Republican Party calling for armed revolution, Judge Head in Lubbock worried about Obama's starting a civil war and sending the UN into Lubbock. Yeah, Lubbock.
Why would he want to do that? And why would the UN be interested in Lubbock, Texas? Hell, I could care less about Lubbock, Texas. As far as I'm concerned, the Mexicans can have it back.
Well, you know, it's like sex between skunks, Jim. It only matters to another skunk. I mean, right. Lubbock matters to Lubbockians, right?
But, I mean, where is the rationale behind the UN having to intervene in Lubbock, Texas?
Well, that's because of Agenda 21, Jim. Because Agenda 21 is the secret, nefarious, totalitarian, one-world government means by which the United States and our beloved Second Amendment that Jesus done give us is going to be overthrown.
Extrapolate.
I wasn't kidding. That's what they think. If you pay close attention to the Repig-Lickin National Convention next week, somewhere along the way, you know, probably about 50 dozen times, you'll hear reference to Obama and Agenda 21. Agenda 21 is merely a planning document for Earth in the 21st century.
Right.
But the right wing, and you know, when you hear right wing, what it means is that, you know, somebody out there with a motive has whipped these morons into a frenzy. There's that white hot frenzy again. Everything, you know what, broccoli for dinner tonight? God damn it, America's under attack, and Obama means to make us all eat broccoli. We heard the Justice of the Supreme Court make that very argument. A Justice of the Supreme Court, Jim, Not some babbling boob, 13th-tier right-wing talker in Beckley. A justice of the Supreme Court said people having access to health care would result in the government forcing everyone to eat broccoli.
Well, I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, I guess Bush, number one, didn't care for broccoli. I love broccoli myself.
I'm crazy about it, and Brussels sprouts too, but don't tell.
The problem with eating broccoli, or as a matter of fact, that's one of the things I'm having with dinner tonight, but I just don't understand. But when you have this stuff coming from high levels of government like that, and these people are listening to all these idiots, and it just seems like everybody is getting access to the medium or the media, and these people who hear it are whipped into such a white hot frenzy about Agenda 21 and the United Nations and world government and stuff like that. I mean, I don't think really most of them have any idea about the historical mission of the United Nations and the good things that it has caused to come about. Do you follow me?
Yes, I do, Jim. And I just looked up while we were talking. I just looked up Agenda 21. Okay.
Okay.
Now, Wikipedia describes it as follows. And, you know, we take Wikipedia with a grain of salt, but sometimes it's a starting place, right?
You have to.
Agenda 21 is a non-binding, voluntarily implemented action plan of the United Nations with regards to sustainable development. It is a product of the UN Conference on Environment and Development, UNCED, held in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, in 1992, the first Rio Accord. It is an action agenda for the UN, other multilateral organizations, and individual governments around the world that can be executed at local, national, and global levels. The Agenda 21 refers to the 21st century. And, I mean, it's really that boring, okay? But let me see. One, two, three, four. Yeah, four links down. No. Three links down, and you're out of rational world on a basic Google search for Agenda 21. The fourth link is Agenda 21 for Dummies, YouTube, explained very well, including implications it will have on humanity. And then number four, is the Soros-sponsored Agenda 21 a hidden plan for world domination? What is Agenda 21? If you do not know about it, you should. Agenda 21 is a two-decade-old grand plan for global sustainable development, blah, blah, blah. That comes from Glenn Beck's website.
Well, I guess they could have said the same thing about the Nuremberg War Trials.
And everything else is Agenda 21 coming to a neighborhood near you. Freedom advocates exposing Agenda 21. The green agenda, Agenda 21. And let's see, how many? It doesn't tell you. Oh, yeah. 71,600,000 results, and the three positives were at the top, and everything else is just crazyville after it.
Bob, I don't understand it. I don't understand where the world's going and what's causes these people to be so woodenly stupid and stupidly wooden to subscribe to the things to which they subscribe. I really don't. I simply don't understand it. Like I say, I can't process it mentally. I mean, to me, the United Nations has always been, as far as I'm concerned,
But you've seen those rusty, in your time and in your day, you've seen those rusty pickup trucks along back roads that say, get us the hell out of the UN. I mean, I know you have, because you've been down south. You can't spend 15 minutes down south without seeing a get us out of the UN bumper sticker.
I guess I have. I don't remember too many. I guess, you know, when I see something like that, I just basically, you know, delete it immediately. But, you know, and we talked about this before. I remember as a kid trick-or-treating for UNICEF and being taught in...
Tommy Front Group.
In which I was taught that the UN was, you know, the wave of the future. That's how I was taught to believe. A good organization designed to help man resolve problems and render assistance the way they have in Africa and places like that to try to combat disease and, you know, to go in and as they were in the Balkans to neutralize elements there that disturbed the peace and resulted in genocide. I mean, to me, the United Nations has always been very positive. As a matter of fact, when I send Christmas cards, they're always from UNICEF. That's where my mindset is. Now, maybe I mean terribly naive here. I mean, I've always supported UNICEF and...
No, you're not naive, Jim. You're decent. You're normal.
You know, I can remember. You know, as a matter of fact, in my official personnel files, the government, they found a thing that I sent in memory of Audrey Hepburn. Remember when she was the spokesman for UNICEF?
Right, yeah.
And when I was looking through my official personnel files, the government, they pulled that and found it, and it was there.
Was that subversive?
I really appreciated what she was doing. And number two, because I always loved Audrey Hepburn. And number three, because I remember how as a young girl she would run missions for the resistance in Holland. And number four, because she was deprived of a decent diet as a growing girl, that she had health problems for the rest of her entire life. You know, that's what the UN meant to me as a young man, and it still does today.
I wish to God it did to knuckle-dragging freaks down in Jesus land, Jim.
I mean, can you remember that beautiful face of hers and her graceful...
I think I first saw Sabrina and Roman Holiday...
Mm-hmm.
When I was maybe 13 or 14 on a late-night rerun in black and white, and I sat there entranced by her beauty.
Remember her...
And thought my heart would break for the love of her.
And remember her role as Holly Golightly in Breakfast at Tiffany's?
Yeah, that came later for me. She just slayed me in Sabrina and Roman Holiday.
And, you know, she was just absolutely... a graceful, beautiful human being who came from a really rough background. I mean, she
had
bad things happened to her. I mean, she was going to be a ballerina and then, not to get off of the biography of Audrey Hepburn, but she's always been one of my favorite people. And you know,
well, you know, you remind me just by making me think of the, you know, the first time that I saw her in a film. You make me remember that, what's the old adage? Scratch a cynic and find a wounded romantic or something like that. Yeah, that's about the size of it.
Exactly. And, of course, she went on to, in her later life, become the ambassador for the UN. And of course, we can get into Princess Diana and her work with landmines and things of that nature. And... you know, it's
remember, again, there are two countries on Earth that have not signed the UN Declaration on Human Rights.
This country and who else?
Iran.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, you know, quantum leap here. I understand that the Iranians have developed some type of, or taken some type of, plan for swift boats and stuff like that, or attack boats that are pretty formidable, aren't they?
That's my understanding. And of course, there's other stuff we had word of several years ago. Some crazy ass super fast underwater missile. Who knows what's waiting for us if we decide to do something stupid.
Well, you know, the thing about it is the Straits of Hormuz, back in my day, it used to be the Fulda Gap. You remember those days when the Red Army was supposed to...
Yeah, they were going to blow through the Fulda Gap. Yeah, right.
And so now the hot spot is the Strait of Hormuz. And that's what they're talking about now. And I remember in that film that came out in 1983 or 82 called The Day After. Remember that one?
Oh, yes.
That's where it got started, was right there in the Straits of Hormuz, when there were problems with that being blockaded and access to fuel and oil and stuff like that precipitated a nuclear conflagration. But, you know, that's a bizarre thing, you know, and I don't know. It would appear to me as though that could be an actionable situation. I mean, when you think about the world today, and I'm not trying to rain on anybody's parade tonight, but when you think about the, for example, missile boats, you know, the boomers?
Yeah.
That are all over the globe. And you think about who is capable of sending them, an emergency action message. It's kind of frightening to me because, I mean, those missile boats, one of those missile boats, and I don't know if it's Ohio class, but we'll call it Trident class, okay?
Yeah.
And, of course, the Russians have their own. I forget the name of what it's called. I used to know all that stuff real well. But, I mean, they're basically the second most powerful country in the world. Think about it.
Yeah.
And they are at undisclosed locations, and they are some with 20, 24, I think ours have 20, theirs have 24, or the Russian Federation has 24. I mean, it's just incredible to realize how quickly something like that could happen. And you've got these young sailors and stuff like that who are programmed to follow the direction of six.
Well, you know, that director who committed suicide in L.A. last weekend, Tony Scott, brought us the submarine disaster film Crimson Tide. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
And the showdown between Gene Hackman and Denzel Washington?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, this guy was going to push the button, and he was going to release all these weapons that could really, it's just incredible to realize that
And yet, you're right. You have to walk out of the theater going, of course, that could never happen.
But it could. But it could. But either one Trident class or one Soviet class, and why cannot I remember the label of that thing? Typhoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, the boomers. And, of course, that situation with Iran at the Strait of Hormuz with the swift boats and stuff like that could really start something really ugly.
Well, look, we're paranoid enough. Remember the story from a few weeks ago, maybe a month and a half ago, of how we blew away a fishing vessel because our U.S. Navy vessels were so scared of it?
I know. I mean, after the cold back in 2000 or 2001, when, you know, that rubber raft came up and blew a hole in it. I mean, that's the stuff of which world wars are made. I mean, that's the basically...
Stupid shootouts on side streets in Sarajevo.
Exactly. The assassination of the Archduke. There it is, and there you have it. I mean, who would have thought that the assassination of one man who was in a Morgan Addict marriage, who was told not to go there in the first place because it was a Serbian Independence Day, I believe, and it was just me, but he went anyway. He shouldn't have done it. But, I mean, this guy, and he wasn't a bad guy, Archie Ferdinand. I mean, he had basically envisioned a whole United States of Austria type thing in which he would give the Serbs and those people what they wanted.
Yeah, autonomy.
Exactly, or a part, or an equal part with the Germans and Magyars and things of that nature. That's basically what he wanted to do. And even in his office, there was a whole map. I've seen pictures of a whole map, but he wasn't a bad person and didn't deserve what he got, in my opinion, nor did his wife. And you see what happened, how these things have a force multiplier, and it's just like a room full of dominoes or a room filled with mousetraps and ping pong balls, how those reactions can occur. And what I've always depended on the United Nations and the Security Council, and the reason it was founded was to stop this kind of thing so that people could get together and reason. I mean, we saw this happen. I mean, we came so close back in 1962 to world obliteration with the Cuban Missile Crisis. I mean, we were just a hair's breadth away from nuclear annihilation. I mean, it was just incredible. And, of course, where did they first surface the problems there? It came into the United Nations Security Council and with Ambassador Stevenson, addressing Zorin. And it gave us, at that point...
It doesn't take much, and yet...
It gave us breathing space in which we could pull back.
Right.
And that's
but disaster really is a hair's the difference between disaster and survival is literally a hair's breadth. But by comparison, then consider that stupid trailer audio that I played at the beginning of the program. A blood fantasy about being invaded by North Korea. North Korea, really?
Invading the United States and the West Coast.
Right, and bear in mind, it opens Thanksgiving, which means it will get a hell of an advertising push in the weeks before it, which would be long about the election.
And you'll see these people who go to that movie, and they'll say, oh, my God.
You know what? It'll be number one at the box office in places like Lubbock, Jim.
Oh, yeah, Pyongyang is going to be in San Francisco. I mean, oh, God, Red Dawn was bad enough.
I mean, I'm surprised that they're not wearing blue UN helmets, okay? I think if the director could have gotten away with it, he probably would have.
Probably. But like I say, the United Nations and its mission... have always been positive to me, and how it could be negative in the eyes of these people are just totally unfathomable.
Indeed.
And they really are. They really are.
It's all unfathomable, and the only thing that gives me any solace is this, this opportunity I have every night to talk with other people who kind of keep me out of the trees, and I appreciate it. Jim, have yourself a wonderful weekend, my friend.
Well, the same to you, and... take care and enjoy the in summer as it approaches.
Indeed. And I don't know what we're going to do on Tuesday when that yo-yo speaks.
Which one is that now?
Rick Snuffer. Jesus God.
You didn't know that?
No, I didn't. I started the show and I didn't have a need to drink, and now I do. So, thanks, Jim. In the grand tradition of W.C. Fields,
Yeah, I know. But Tuesday at 2000 hours or 8 p.m.
Well, mark your calendars, get the popcorn and the ether.
Well, I mean, since coal is something that you have, it's very dear to your heart, or the menacing image of it. Can you imagine what he's going to have to say?
Yeah, and you know what? Now that you've told me about it, I wonder if maybe we need to have a response ready.
Well, that's the reason I sent it to you.
Well, I think I'll engage in some dialogue with some friends and see what we can come up with.
I mean, have you ever met this guy?
Mercifully, no. I mean, I try not to engage with people who are going to, whose very proximity will lower my IQ. Is this the guy who worked at Montgomery Ward and was like sending naked pictures of himself around or something?
I think that's one of his relatives.
Oh, okay.
That's his. I think that's his brother or cousin. You know. And
well, them apples fall off the tree and lay mighty close.
Yeah, they do. They do. But I mean, the fact that you're going to have somebody like this going to address the issue of.
Well, what I find hilarious is that he's going to talk about coal, and his opponent is the single most pro-coal member of the entire Congress. You know, our sitting member of the House, Representative Rahal.
Mm-hmm.
The man jumps out of planes to prove his loyalty to the coal industry. That's not a criticism, it's just fact.
Well, I guess that's the reason they've gotten Mr. Snuffer, and the very name, when I hear it, I start laughing. If my surname was Snuffer, I think I'd have to change it.
Yeah, but we've got a Republican presidential candidate whose first name's Willard, so...
Oh, that movie's on tonight, by the way.
Justice! Thanks, Jim. Have a good night.
Good night.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim. You know, the last few nights I've been on a Joe Bajent binge. Joe's gone. I miss him terribly. Joe Bajent, BAGEANT.com. His essays are still there at his website. It's being maintained, and you can go and read it when you need to, and sometimes you need to. I ran across this one last night called Live from Planet Norte. America's Totalitarian Democracy and the Politics of Plunder, or Life is a Titty Tuck in a Dodge Truck. Starting with the Homeland Security probe at Washington's Reagan Airport, arrival back in the United States resembles an alien abduction to a planet of bright lights, strange beings, and incomprehensible behavior. The featureless, misophobic landscape of D.C.'s Virginia suburbs seems to indicate that homogeneity and sterility are the native religions, especially after spending 8 months in Mexico's pungent atmosphere of funky, sensual open-air markets, rotting vegetation, smoking street food grills, sweat, agave nectar, and ghost orchids. The uniformity on Planet Norte is striking. Each person is a unit, installed in life support boxes in the suburbs and cities. All are fed, clothed by the same closed-loop corporate industrial system. Everywhere you look, inhabitants are plugged in at the brainstem to screens downloading their state-approved daily consciousness updates. iPods, Blackberries, notebook computers, monitors, and cubicles, and the ubiquitous TV screens in lobbies, bars, waiting rooms, and even in taxicabs mentally need, KNEAD, the public brain and condition its reaction to non-Americanness, which may be defined as anything that does not come from or of Washington, D.C., Microsoft, Walmart. For such a big country, the American experience is extremely narrow and provincial, leaving its people with approximately the same comprehension of the outside world as an oyster bed. Yet there is that relentless busyness of Nortanians, that sort of constant movement that indicates all parties are busy, 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 but offers no clue as to just what they're busy at. We can be sure, however, that it has to do with consuming. Everything in America has to do with consuming. So much so that we find not the slightest embarrassment in calling ourselves the consumer society. Which is probably just as well, since calling ourselves something such as the just society might have been aiming a bit too high. Especially for a nation that never did find enough popular support to pass any of the 200 anti-lynching bills brought before its Congress, even Franklin Roosevelt refused to back them. On the other hand, there's no disputing that we do reduce all things to consumption, or requiring money for consumption, or paying on the debt for past consumption. It keeps things simple and stamps them as authentically American. For example, and this was back during the Gulf of Mexico oil disaster. For example, now faced with what may be the biggest ecological disaster in human history, I'm hearing average Americans up here talk of the Gulf oil spill, when they speak of it at all. TV gives the illusion those outside the Gulf region give a shit, in terms of its effect on A, the price of seafood, and B, jobs in tourism and fishing. Only trolls stunted by generations of inbred American-style capitalism could do such a thing, reduce a massive ocean dead zone to the cost of a shrimp cocktail or a car payment. Meanwhile, even as capitalism shows every sign of collapsing upon them under the weight of its sheer non-sustainability, Norte Americanos wait like patient, not too bright children for its recovery. Recovery, of course, is that time when they can once again run through the malls and outlet stores, the car lots and the fried chicken palaces, eating, grabbing, and consuming. No doubt, something resembling a recovery will be staged for their benefit, thereby goosing their pocketbooks at least one more time before the rest of the world forecloses on the country. It's just a part of it. You might find it somehow darkly comforting to go over and read Joe's musings again and again and again. He died at 65. He was taken from us too early. And I find myself missing him a little more every day. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm well. What's up, Bill?
Ah, a lot of things. Before I forget, I want to send you a link that a friend of mine found on the net, and it was written by someone who I haven't seen in more than 20 years. And when you read it, you'll understand why this thing brought tears to my eyes because of what this person wrote. And it wasn't offensive. It was just that it was such a beautiful piece that it's astounded me. It's knocked me. I'm an old guy. It knocked me on my can. I haven't had anybody speak so nicely of me in my life. I had to look to see if my mother wrote it, you know.
Yeah.
Or it's the old joke. I had to look at who this person was writing about. It's like you go to a funeral and the guy's preaching the eulogy and you have to go out and look at the name on the door to make sure you're in the right place. Because what the
yeah, we talking about the same corpse here? Yeah, right.
Exactly. This guy. Wait a minute.
I thought he was so crooked they were going to have to screw him into the dirt. Yeah.
Exactly. So anyway, I'll ship you that. But yeah, I sent you the thing this morning where I was on the air with these people and they were talking coal and gas, and then I was going to give them the correct speech on this almost level thing that you're living with, and they hung up.
Naturally.
They're talking crap. And these are people who I agree with politically, but the way they handle it is still...
Well, you know, that's born, Bill, of ignorance.
Nah, I think it's born of ratings and cash and who's sponsoring what.
Well, depending on what the outlet is, absolutely. I mean, for instance, I remarked on it a few nights ago or a couple of weeks ago or whenever the hell it was. About the fact that, you know, you'll get, for instance, Soledad O'Brien on CNN will bring you some hard-hitting journalism with hard questions, unless it has to do with coal.
Yeah.
Because, after all, the coal industry spends some several millions of dollars with CNN every year, and even Soledad O'Brien is not going to ask hard questions about coal. Instead, she's going to do a puff piece where she winds up spending all of her focus talking about the poor, poor, pitiful mountaintop remover who's going to have to drive an hour to work now when he used to just be able to blow up the mountain behind his house and poison his children a little easier.
It's so offensive. And Bob, I'm a selfish guy because I look around at these people and say, well, when they're through with that, they will find another way to make money, and they don't give a shit who stands in the way of it. Whether it's you, me, or... I mean,
fracking? Anybody? Fracking? Tar sands? Anyone?
In Estabula County, which is two counties from me, east of me, and the earthquake situation, you know, and the poisoning, and, you know, it's too
I read a blog post, and I can't remember where it came from the other day. It was an account by a woman of the sickness that she and her family had been through. They bought a house, and they bought it with no knowledge in the title that their next-door neighbor had sold off the rights to frack a bunch of his land, which means, you know, it's horizontal in nature.
Yep.
And so they went down there and fracked underneath their house, too. And this woman was getting near death. And, you know, so it was this long, passionate, fact-based, point-by-point explanation of what fracking had done to her life, okay? The first comment was one of those Nicola comment things. I've been involved in the natural gas industry for 50 years, and this here is a bunch of hogwash. Yeah, fracking ain't never made nobody sick.
Yeah. Now, they don't care. The name of the game is money, and there's just no way around it. And yeah, we as a society are dependent on energy. There's no way around that. But, hell, if people didn't look forward back in the 1880s, you'd be walking behind your horse with a shovel.
Yeah.
And you, when you find that things have, you've used up and it's now going negative, then you have to put the human brain to finding new things to work with. And they're there. The Germans have gone so heavily solar, and they don't have the damn sunlight we get.
They're 10 degrees north of us.
Yeah. And the wind where you are, oh, come on, you know. You certainly don't have to build it, build a lot of high towers there, do you, to get it up in the...
No, we on intact mountaintops in West Virginia, a wind turbine goes up into wind speeds that just make wind energy producers drool.
Yeah. And there's, well, I always said that we would not have different forms of energy until the bastards figured out a way to bill you for it once a month.
Yeah.
Cynical? Yeah, I am, you know.
No, I don't think that's cynicism. I think that's capitalist reality.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the goals is to make sure that solar panels and wind turbines are never inexpensive enough that the average homeowner can purchase them, because they don't take up that much space.
No, they don't.
But, you know, if you were able to purchase them and go off the grid and just live on the energy you produced from the sun and the wind, and you had that extra $300 to $500 a month to just put in your pocket, well, hell, what would happen to power company stocks?
Well, you know, the weak.
I mean, it'd be great for Main Street, but it would just suck for Wall Street.
Yeah. The weakness that I find in my society is I'll get on a college talk shows on a Saturday night, and I'll listen to them, and I don't know what I think to a lot of these people, books are something you hold up the coffee table with. Not much else you do with them.
That or the coffee table is anti-grav, and you use the really thick ones to keep it down, keep it from floating up into the middle of the living room.
Well, you know, my generation, your dad's generation, and back before them, you learned to do everything you could possibly do yourself. And how did you learn it? You worked with people who knew, or you read, and then you went to it and did it. I just finished a light piece of reading amusement, a book called Satchel, which is a biography written about 2 or 3 years ago of Leroy Page.
Yes.
Oh, what a man that guy was. And what a thing baseball was that he played. You know, he played here in Cleveland, and when I was a baby, and my mother was a big fan of 48 Indians, he went 6-1 at age 42. And every game.
If he really was 42.
Yeah. Well, if he might have been a little older for that matter. The idea being that the Indians finished in a dead heat with the Boston Red Sox. And they won a one game playoff that they played. But hell, every game they won put him in, otherwise it would have been a great trivia question. In 48, the automatic winner of the World Series would have been Boston. Either the Red Sox or the Braves. Interesting. connotation there, huh? That's like the
well, I didn't realize
thing,
that.
You know. Yeah, getting into more serious stuff. The things you're talking about, like this secession stuff. Are these people nuts? Didn't they? And sometimes I feel
you were about to say, didn't they learn, weren't you, Bill?
Yeah.
You want the quick answer?
No.
No, they didn't.
Yeah.
I remember being a little baby redneck. Back in the days before car carriers, I'd stand on the bench seat of a 1966 Chrysler Newport Town Sedan, turquoise in color.
Oh yeah.
With my hand on my father's shoulder, and my mother's arm across my middle.
You're holding you up, yeah.
And my father, who had emigrated from West Virginia down south, would look at my mother upon seeing some, because they were all over. There were two front bumper tags that you would see in Alabama. One of them showed a grizzled old Confederate veteran with the stars and bars over his shoulder, and it just said, "Forget hail." But the other one, and the one that would occasion, and that I remember so well, you know, we'd be driving around. My father was a Reds fan, Bill. And so on Sundays when he was off, he wasn't always off on Sundays. On Sunday afternoons when he was off, we would drive out into the countryside looking for a little high parcel of ground so that he could bring in Cincinnati and the ball game.
Oh yeah.
You know, because that was a blowtorch of a signal.
Crosley Field.
Yep, from Crosley Field. With the hill in center field.
Place that went underwater in the late 20s and the big floods.
I'd be there. I'd be standing in the middle of the bench seat, just a little fella. And my father, I remember the day he saw. Maybe it was the first one he'd seen. But he saw this. You know, Alabama, you only put your plate on the back of the car. On the front, the front place, you can put some personal expression. And I guess it was the first time he'd seen it because he was flabbergasted. Because I remember him looking at my mother and saying, "Margaret, what in the Sam Hill is wrong with these people?" I don't know, Kenneth. Because the bumper tag, Bill, said, "The South will rise again."
Yeah, well, you know, I used to have buddies that would use that expression to me, guys from, the deeper South and West by God. And I would say, "Yeah, they'll rise up and kiss my ass." And boy, did they get mad. They didn't like that at all, you know. And I don't blame them, but, you get tired of hearing that.
Right, but in answer to your question, that was a long way to get there. No, they did not learn.
No.
They did not learn. They got whipped. And inside of 10 years, I mean, you can track it. It's historically trackable. Dr. Bill and Keith have talked about this.
That's where the rise of the religious...
Well, you've got within 10 really years, within 10 years, the idea of the lost cause takes hold.
Yep.
Well, we knew we was going to lose, but we was fighting for our freedom.
Yep.
When the Ordinance of Secession of Mississippi says that slavery is the greatest good that has ever been bestowed by God upon man, and that it is the central issue defining the secession.
It's such an immoral... It, to begin with, it's immoral as hell. And, and these are biblical people who would hide behind...
So were the secessionists.
What?
Yeah, the secessionists were very much biblical people.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I see this alliance between the church that I was raised in. I spent 4 years at a place that I refer to as the Lord of the Flies Memorial Catholic Children's Home. It was, that's why I've been half nuts all my life, because you go out there at age 9. They took me out of my home because my mother was overprotecting me. She didn't think that me as a young kid running around a housing project in the 50s was a great thing to do. And she was right, you know. I was a straight-A student, and when I came home from that place, that children's home, they said, "What'd you learn?" I said, "Well, I got to be a good baseball and football player, and by God, I learned to to be a barroom brawler at the age of 12. Bob, you know, when a kid's 12, you shouldn't be beating some kid's head off of a concrete floor. But we would do it. It was that kind of a situation.
Right. And, you know,
I learn all that stuff.
A moment ago, we remarked on the place of religion in the argument in favor of slavery. You know, that's not the only place that's ever occurred. You've raised this topic, and it works out perfectly because you know who Billy Sunday was.
Yep.
The great evangelist.
Yep.
The man who basically invented the massive religious money hustle. At one point in time, he was making $1 million a year. Billy Sunday was. When the average American, the average one, was making $14,000.
You hit something in this thing on page. At one point, black and white players were playing out in, of all places, North Dakota and California during the off season, and there was this Israelite House of David. You familiar with them?
No.
Well, it was a group that started, some minister started it, and it was the same thing. He found some mysterious writing, and they were cults, and they sponsored, like, I first heard about them with the adults around me talking about the House of David baseball teams. They were traveling baseball teams.
Billy Sunday was a baseball player.
Ah. Uh-huh. These guys sponsored.
He was a pro with the Chicago White Stockings.
Huh.
Known for his base
Billy
running.
They could not shut down.
Well, but you know, the religion is always co-opted as a means of controlling the masses.
Yeah.
It's not just the opiate of the masses, as Marx suggested. It is also the chains of the masses. And I wanted to share this quote with you from Billy Sunday.
Yeah.
He was hired during the height of the labor unrest in the coal fields, the so-called mine wars.
Yeah.
Billy Sunday was hired to come in and preach a tent revival in a coal camp. And these are his remarks with regard to labor unions. You know, this is a generation after preachers stood in the pulpit and preached that God intended African people to be slaves because they bore the mark of Cain.
Cain, yeah.
Right. And that was later picked up, of course, by the Mormon Church. They only stepped away from it in 1878. Or 1978.
Yeah, that was late. It was my lifetime.
1978. Well, Billy Sunday preached this sermon, and speaking of members of organized labor, in April of 1922, this is less than a year after the Battle of Blair Mountain, okay? He said, I cannot believe God had anything to do with the creation of these human buzzards. I'd rather be in hell with Cleopatra, John Wilkes Booth, and Charles Guiteau than to live on Earth with such human lice. The radicals would turn the milk of human kindness into Limburger cheese and give a polecat convulsions. If I were the Lord for about 15 minutes, I'd smack the bunch so hard that there would be nothing left for the devil to levy on but a bunch of whiskers and a bad smell.
And they convinced working people to put the knife in their own hand and stab themselves with it.
Yeah. Well, who was the one who said, I can get half the workers to kill the other half of the workers?
Was that Gould or Fisk?
I think it was Gould.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it was that was the panic of 1873. Hell, I just learned the other day that there was a bank problem in about 1907 where the banks were issuing scrip.
No kidding.
Yeah, I just heard that the other day, and I can't verify it. I wasn't there, and I haven't found anything. I haven't looked for it either, Bob. I'm lazy, you know. Working over the computer gives me eye strain. But it's still, I just don't know anymore. I used to tell people, go get a copy of McPherson's Battle Cry of Freedom. Read nothing but the political chapters. Forget the war. Just read the political chapters and see how we slid into it. And just as they did in August 1914.
Yeah.
And you commented that you read Stillwell in the American Experience in China, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I learned so much from that thing as far as, and then that leads into the China lobby, and that leads into more and more.
Oh, yeah.
And then the open door policy that they talked about in the early 1900s, I think it was the door to the employment office they wanted open.
Yeah.
So they could get all these people in China to work for a bowl of rice.
Huh, funny. Here we are in the 21st century, and we're doing the same thing. How about that?
Things don't.
Only thing is, the rice is now more expensive and scarcer.
Yeah.
Supply and demand. It's just economics, Bill.
Well, you and Jim talking about the hormones thing has me worried, too. And believe me, I was very pro-Israel when I was a kid. I remember sitting at my desk in 1967 when they took out the Egyptian Air Force. And in 1973, I was following on the BBC. I was following the cross-canal invasion by the Egyptians, you know.
Yeah. And you know, 67, 73, there was a whole bunch of Americans who were being led by their pastors to scream, "Go Israel! Yay, Jesus!" And never for an instant recognizing that there was a little bit of a cognitive dissonant break between the two.
Well, I've had to tell a couple people, that friends of mine, musicians that happen to be Jewish, about the Jewish Zion, the Christian Zionists, and what the end result that they're looking for is.
Y'all get gigged.
Yeah. Here's your last chance, folks. I worked for a company where the guy handed out books in 61 or 2 of a thing called None Dare Call It Treason. I just said drop the T. It was a Birch Society book.
Yeah.
Everybody was a communist.
Yeah, Eisenhower. Yeah, Eisenhower was a commie. Yeah, Dwight Eisenhower. Yeah, really? And yet it's all been recycled. You could take that silly hate-filled book, and if you had an electronic form of it, you could do a global search and replace, and just change Eisenhower to Obama, and it would probably be a bestseller published by the goobers over at Wingnut Daily.
Yeah. I don't understand how these people can think this way and believe this crap, but they do. And well, I'll leave you with.
And they mean it, Bill. They mean it.
Yes. I remember when my daughter got to a certain age, I turned around to the American crime writers, Hammett and Chandler. She read two or three Chandler books and came back to me and says, "Hey, it's just like you, a knight in tarnished armor." And I said, "Yeah, that's like a kick out of him, but you won't start it, you know." But it's true. It's what you said about a cynic.
Yeah, scratch a cynic, find a. Heartbroken romantic, or
yep, John P. was
wounded romantic. That's what I
about Thomas Aquinas and Ryan. How Aquinas talked about how, you know, if you have a lot of material goods, you should share them with other people. Yeah, and that just doesn't fit with what they want. They scare me. I mean, the other guy is no prize. It's the old story again. Hold your nose. And what a way to have to vote. What a way to then, you know, if you vote for these, I mean, I listened to Perot heavily in 1992 because I saw economically, I thought what he was talking about might be coming.
Yeah, it was, and he made some sense until he started talking about the Martians landing on his lawn and the CIA abducting his daughter.
Yeah,
and then we realized he was nuts.
Well, the economic situation is. If there's a buck to be made, regardless of how it's to be made, there is somebody who's willing to try and make it that way.
Yeah, because business, I mean, they used to say that the greatest oxymoron in the English language was military intelligence.
Yeah.
It has since been supplanted, Bill. The greatest oxymoron in the English language is now business ethics.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, my friends and I were debating this, that what happened to the boomer generation that was taught economics? Were they not taught ethics at all?
Well, there's no such thing as business and ethics together in a capitalist system.
Yeah.
They're mutual. They truly are mutually exclusive.
Well, the Germans seem to have a pretty good system going as far as how they handle their workers.
Yeah, but some of those evil bastards are funding mountaintop removal. So there you go.
and forest removal and everything removal, you know, in an old society, you know.
Right.
You know, let's get this out of the way because it's standing between us and a dollar, you know, or a buck.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you go and get somebody else on here, but I'm going to send you this one link, and if you get a chance, take a look at it, and you'll see why this thing really knocked me on my can emotionally. It's from a young friend that I hadn't seen and haven't seen. I'm trying to talk to because a lot of kids. We worked bars that were on the Case campus and Cleveland Institute of Art students, and they're all over the damn country, you know.
Yeah.
I get stuff from people all over the place that I can't.
Well, I read that Pretenders lyric last night. I never realized you'd been referenced in a Pretenders lyric.
Well, somebody brought her up to me in spring of 75. And
Chrissy Hind, yeah.
Yeah, I worked a little with her and her brother. I know real well. He's a sax player, a good one. And we did not hit it off at all because I think I wrote why. You know, my sister dying of cancer, and somebody says to that some friend, this young lady, says, well, that's psychosomatic. Well, luckily there was a couple people to keep me from committing mayhem, you know. It's something you don't say to somebody like when somebody in their family, close family, is going, you know, from it.
Indeed.
It was only 35.
Oh, God.
People say, don't you worry about it? Well, and I said, nah, in this case, I don't have to worry about this particular type of, since it was ovarian, it leaves me out. They'll find another one, you know. This stand in line, there's one somewhere.
Yeah.
There's something somewhere that's going to get you. And anyway, try to make the best of the weekend and hang in there.
I sure will, Bill. It's been a wonderful conversation. You had a good weekend, too. Take care.
Right.
Bye now. Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. He really is. He gets referenced in on the original Pretenders album, The Pretenders, self-entitled. He gets referenced in a song called Precious. Check it out. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I wanted to wish you and everybody else a happy 90th birthday to Howard Zinn.
Hear, hear. I saw that.
The people's historian, for sure. In his book, A People's History of the United States, continues to fill the classrooms of many high schools and colleges across the country. So, again, despite the onslaught of all the corporatocracy's media, we've certainly got a lot going on our side.
It's there for those who can find it.
Yeah, yeah. And
making it findable is the challenge.
Yeah, and I think it's part of our responsibility. Certainly, you know, it's what you're doing with your show, but, you know, so many progressives and liberals are like, oh, I feel so powerless and so overwhelmed, and what can I do? It's make this stuff more available through word of mouth, through sharing, through giving, DVDs, books, magazine articles, all that good stuff. Music. There's a couple, I know Eddie Vedder actually was a close friend of Howard and his wife, and one of his songs has, I think, pulls a line from one of Howard Zinn's quotes. Matt Damon, the actor, he actually lived next door to Howard Zinn.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And his mom, Matt Damon's mom, is just an incredible progressive activist in her own
yes,
life.
Yes, she is, and she was a wonderful teacher, I understand, or maybe still is.
I think she still is, certainly still an advocate. She's associated with a magazine called, I think it's Rethinking Schools. Let me double-check that real quick. I have a magazine rack. Yeah, Rethinking Schools. And they, you know, how to talk to young people about these issues that they're going to be facing in such hardcore ways as they grow older. And they do environmental issues. Their current issue is actually about teaching cancer and about raising awareness of the environmental toxins and, you know, stuff that you've taught us so much about as regards King Cole. But, yeah, so, yeah, Howard Zinn Presente, for sure. And Joe Badgent, you mentioned him, and I was curious to see what I could find of his on YouTube, and I did a quick search, and his spirit certainly lives on through that amazing vehicle.
And you know, there's one more thing that we hope to add to the Joe Badgent oeuvre, if you will.
Okay.
Somewhere back in the archives, and our buddy Ray is searching them. He really is. He's just taking it upon himself to go back and search the archives and find that Joe Badgent interview. And when we find it, we'll figure out a way to put that up. You know, maybe our buddy Horst can put it up on his channel. Because it's 3 hours long of
you
of me and Joe Badgent.
Oh, excellent.
Mostly Joe. And God, yeah. I yearn to find it.
That would be great. In fact, a lot of your material, I think, could be put up on YouTube. I actually have a friend who's a very tech guy too. If Horst or whoever needs a hand, or if you need more people on deck to do that kind of thing, I have a friend who just loves to, you know, that's his niche in the movement, is uploading material to YouTube. So, you know, the Joe interview, your interview with Sandra Steingrauer,
mm-hmm.
that would be fantastic to get up there. And it's simply all we would do was put up the audio and, you know, just find one or another graphic and
right.
make it available.
Right, exactly. You got a little fan mail in, Preston. Our dear friend Jude out in the Great Northwest, she said, Preston's eternal optimism. Bob, I'm currently rereading Howard Zinn's book, A Power Governments Cannot Suppress.
Excellent.
And she says, Namaste, Preston.
Right on. Likewise, Jude. Thank you. Excellent. Speaking of namaste, I've been practicing yoga for the past couple of years, and that's been a great experience, you know, for, you know, releasing some of the, you know, anger and despair and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I'm curious how many hours of yoga it takes to wash to work out all the venom and vitriol that we talk about on this program. I probably would have to stop sleeping, but I understand some yogis can do that.
I'm getting there. That's what I'm working towards for sure. Yeah. And, you know, I do this certain practice called hot yoga, very warm room. And, so it becomes like a sweat lodge also. So it releases a lot of that, you know, there's emotional stuff going on with us, and there's, you know, stuff we eat, stuff we're breathing in the air, stuff we're drinking. And, you know, it can be, people are there for a variety of reasons, but it's a powerful experience. I've met a lot of, you hear about people and their illnesses and their injuries and how they're trying to heal. Very interesting stuff. And a lot of people involved with yoga are also very much involved with their communities and nutrition issues. And so it's been a good experience. So if people are looking for another release that doesn't involve, you know, the pharmaceutical industry, I would recommend that. I'm also privileged to have a meditation place like half a block from me. I don't make it there very much, but again, there are these other options, you know, to, you know, counter the overwhelm. That's so easy to feel at times. And, in fact, early on, I don't meditate a lot, but I came across this, collection of spoken word CDs on the roots of Buddhist psychology by a guy named Jack Kornfield. Hugely helpful in kind of helping me work my way through the inevitable, you know, issues of life, especially engaged in political stuff. And, you know, Western philosophy as well can be so useful. Spinoza, John Dewey. There's a book out called Plato, Not Prozac, that suggests that philosophy can have all sorts of practical benefits to our mental health. What else? And talk. You know, again, just an open space, an open field to share thoughts and speak freely.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Well, it has what I hope is, I was going to say a cleansing effect, but not just that, but an effect on a clarity effect, I guess, Preston. You know, the more we have a space for dialogue and discussion, and then you know, doors open and light comes in and things may, at least what part of the world we can make sense of, we make sense of. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's ever going to be one of those sunbeam through the windows moments when we understand why, you know, a raving paranoid maniac who became a judge in Lubbock, Texas, is convinced that Barack Obama wants to wage civil war on the United States. I don't know if a functioning human brain can go there. But there is other stuff that we can.
Yeah. You know, the narrative about Obama setting up the FEMA concentration camps.
Yeah.
There was another story about how the shooting here in Denver was another inside job constructed by the government so that Obama could take everybody's guns away. I mean, it's just bizarre. And it gets picked up and people run with it. It's distressing, but again, providing access, easier access to other stories, other facts. And, you know, the UN, that whole story, you know, that's why some groups hate the UN so much, because they're serving the NRA, basically, which does see that the UN potentially could cut into their profit margin because they so love selling their weapons to, you know, third world countries. And the UN may here and there disrupt their sales, their marketing.
Well, that's why another one of those things, and Willard Romney addressed it on the hustings, Preston. We're not going to let Obama let the UN take away our guns, our God-given Second Amendment rights. What he was referring to was a treaty that would limit the access of terrorists and drug gangs to mass purchase of firearms. And the NRA, of course, ran right out, speaking not on behalf of its membership, Preston, but on behalf of gun manufacturers and gun dealers, and said, they're trying to take your freedoms.
Yeah. I think Think Progress did a good response to that particular conspiracy theory about the UN, you know, suggestion that was coming up. It completely failed and it was squashed despite this very intricate and well-orchestrated inside job at the Aurora Theater. Well, Obama still wasn't able to, in fact, the Obama administration was very weak when it came to that effort by the UN. So the whole story makes zero sense, but anyway.
And the idea that Dave Mustaine is in Singapore telling people in Singapore that America has become a Nazi country. Mm. I mean, Singapore? Yeah, you're... And, you know, I had an email earlier. I thought I wanted to share it with you while we're talking. It came in from our buddy Jay. And Jay said, for the last week I've been watching my beloved dog deteriorate. He's dying, and there's nothing I can do about it. For the last 10 years, I've been watching my beloved country dying, and there's nothing I can do about that either. Nothing, that is, except I can stop watching it. I'm reminded of my mother telling me the story about not forbidding us boys from climbing the tall trees that grew around our house. But whenever we did, she wouldn't watch. I may go to Nicaragua and settle in a small inland town where there is little or no internet service or cell phone usage. From there, I can simply ignore the disaster that is descending on the United States. The dog died last night. The nation is, at this point, on life support.
Yeah, yeah. And isn't that what Joe did? Something similar to that?
Joe absented himself. First he went to Belize, and then he went to Ajijic, Mexico.
Okay. Although he did stay aware, mindful of what was going on, but you know, mixed it with a lot of
he wrote brilliant things from south of the border, and I understand why, Preston, because it's you know, if you go to an art museum, if you go to the Louvre and you look at Mona Lisa and you get right up on top of it and you only look at one eyelash, you have no comprehension of the greater enormity of the genius that conceived the painting. You have to step back. And just in the couple of weeks that I had the privilege of stepping back and looking at my country from somewhere else was of inestimable value.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, just taking different looks at it. You know, I just posted something on my Facebook page about the use of depleted uranium in war and what a utter catastrophe that is and the crime against humanity. Tons and tons of this ordnance made with depleted uranium.
Right, and of course the American for-profit media can't be bothered to report on the
right.
fact that the, and I'm not being facetious, it's just a shorthand, well, no, let's just use this, the epidemic of birth deformities that are happening in places where we use them in Iraq is shocking to the conscience. But again, sorry, you won't see much of that on CNN or any of the Fox or MSNBC even. You just won't see it.
And in that regard, it is like a Nazi sort of something the Nazis will love engaging in. In fact, I think DU was first developed in Nazi Germany. But that's not all of America. America is also Howard Zinn and the freedom he had to speak out and to write books, and that people accepted him and embraced him as they do and continue to promote his work. And also, every state you're going to find progressive spirits, progressive activism and organization. And you have a neighboring state that I just learned a lot about recently, Kentucky, which, you know, it's super red in many people's minds, but a lot of incredible activism.
Oh, yeah, I mean, the home of Wendell Berry.
You took the words right out of my mouth. And I know you've got to leave in a couple minutes, but I want this quote from him to be, you know, the last thing I share with you, if I may.
Absolutely.
This is from something he wrote called A Poem of Difficult Hope. He wrote, much protest is naive. It expects quick, visible improvement and despairs and gives up when such improvement does not come. Protesters who hold out for longer have perhaps understood that success is not the proper goal. If protest depended on success, there would be little protest of any durability or significance. History simply affords too little evidence that anyone's individual protest is of any use. Protest that endures, I think, is moved by a hope far more modest than that of public success, namely, the hope of preserving qualities in one's own heart and spirit that would be destroyed by acquiescence. Wendell Berry. So
beautiful,
yeah.
Beautiful.
I found that on the great U.S. founded resource Wikipedia. You know, Wendell Berry's wiki quote section. Lots of wisdom contained therein.
He is a wise man, and I am proud to say that he is a supporter of the 8 campaign, Preston.
Wonderful. Excellent. Excellent. What else?
We got to get out of here.
I got in right there. I don't mean to keep doing this. Catching you.
Okay,
right
one
here,
last question before you go, and
okay.
try to hit this quick. Question coming in from Andy. Ask Preston what's up with concealed weapons being permitted on the University of Colorado campus. Just announced. I heard a story about it a couple of days ago. Yeah, how's that going down?
I think it's going in the NRA's favor. There was a teacher who was suggested he was not going to teach if his students were going to have guns in class, and court ruled recently that they have a right to have those guns in class. So it's
your God
in their way.
So if they don't like what he's teaching,
click. You know. Remind him that you're carrying something and you might get a better grade, who knows. We still need to turn these some of these guns into
plowshares,
garden hose and all that good stuff, yeah.
Preston, thank you very much and have a great weekend.
Likewise, Bob.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. We've got a minute left, just time enough to wish you all a happy weekend and say thank you very much. We remain $515 from meeting our goal for the month of August. I hope we hit it. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. You with your ideas, your contributions of all form. Our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks, Agnes, for the writing help. Thanks to John Fox and to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks, of course, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. They need your help, as does the AIC campaign, AICACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next, right now, on the Horn. When we stay-